This is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
McCoy at the 10, at the 5, into the end zone. Touchdown! What a great run!
Fires down the middle.
It is intercepted by Micah Hyde! Intercepted! Tre Day! Tre'Davious White!
He's in trouble. He is sacked. Jordan Poyer came unblocked. It is Jerry Hughes who brings him down. What a big play there! McCoy, touch to the right.
Outrunning everybody! 10, 5, touchdown! Touchdown! Touchdown, Buffalo!
Live from One Bills Drive, this is the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts.
Good afternoon. Happy Thursday, everybody. Welcome to the show, the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts. John Murphy, Donald Jones in our One Buffalo studio, and a special guest co-hosting with us in the first hour of the show. You used to seeing him on Fridays at 2, but off-season now, shuffling our schedule around a little bit. Happy to have Lorenzo Alexander in studio with us for this first hour as a co-host. Welcome, Lorenzo. Good to see you.
Yeah, always great seeing you guys. You know,
he's fulfilling his contractual obligations to come in the off-season.
Contractual obligations?
It's a small print in your contract. Don't worry about it. It's in there.
Are they paying me for that?
Your agent missed it. I'm just glad to let you know. Your agent missed it, and you signed off on it, and now here we are.
I thought you were going to say he's fulfilling a lifelong dream to co-host the show.
Yeah, he knows that's not true. Sit next to him? Maybe if we moved him out and sit next to the legend.
It's not a lifelong dream.
We're happy to have you, Lorenzo, and please don't let Donald's constant harassment get to you this hour. I know you
not
don't.
At all.
It's all in good fun, I believe, isn't it, Donald?
Yes, always in good fun.
Always in good
sometimes.
Fun.
For the most part. Right, there you go.
Happy to have you here. Happy to have you also tuned in, whether it's on the radio side at our flagship in Buffalo, WGR Sports Radio 550, or on MSG on the simulcast. We're here for 3 hours, Donald and I. Lorenzo doing this first hour with us, Hall of Famer Thurman Thomas coming in at 1 o'clock today. Nice. And another broadcast Hall of Famer, Merrill Reese, the play-by-play voice of the Philadelphia Eagles, the longest-tenured play-by-play man in the NFL. You guys familiar with Merrill Reese?
No.
I can't really do it.
The longest-tenured, huh?
Yeah. Wow. Oh, yeah. 47 years, 44 years.
Okay.
Ooh. Yeah, you've been doing it.
How long have you been doing it?
14 years.
Is that like a competitive thing between
I'll never
you
catch
play by play guys?
Never catch him. He's good. He's great, actually. He's a great guy.
Yeah. He must have started young.
He's a big Shady fan. I mean, he covered Shady's games. Yeah. And I talked to Merrill about Shady. We were down there in Philadelphia in preseason, right? What's the first preseason game in Philadelphia this year? I talked to Merrill about that.
Yes.
And he's obviously new Sean McDermott.
Third preseason game.
Yeah.
Was it?
Felt like the third.
Man, it's so long ago.
Was it the third?
Yeah. But it wasn't that long ago.
Anyway, Merrill Reese going to be with us coming up at 2 o'clock. I'm looking forward to that. We're happy to have Lorenzo. A lot to talk about. You're welcome to join us at 803-0550. And toll free from outside Buffalo, 1-888-550-2550. Lorenzo, we talked to you about this for a couple of weeks, but you are spending this entire offseason, for the most part, here in Western New York for school purposes, right? So what do you think? How do you like your first Western New York winter a couple of weeks in?
It's a little bit too much snow for me, but that's why, you know, there are airplanes and things of that nature. And me and my wife will be going to Jamaica tomorrow for about 4 or 5 days, so I can warm up a little bit.
Go ahead.
You feel like you have to say something.
When you got to come back, you know?
No, I like Western New York. I just want to
warm
up.
I'm not going to warm up. I just want to warm up. Back again.
No, I'll be fine. You know, I adjust well. I just need to warm up. I just need a little break.
You wouldn't have to leave.
I just want a little break.
Oh, right.
I've had it for so long. You just need a little break, and then you come back.
And you'll be fine.
Exactly what you do. You are here, and then you like to go on sabbatical for a week and then come back.
But I'm going to New Jersey, so there's no warm-up in there.
But you get away. It's all about getting away.
Oh, all right. I got
That's
you.
All it's all about.
Yeah.
Getting away and come back. Me and my wife are celebrating 10 years of marriage. And
excellent.
So we're going to have a great time
Happy
together.
Happy anniversary.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, we did. We had a week sabbatical, Donald and I. We were off 5 straight days.
We did.
Which is amazing.
They gave us
it was
all
a great break.
Yeah, I heard about that. And you came right back in, just flowing right well, and he still had a little hangover, huh? You stumbled back in. Professional, young guy.
Yeah.
You know,
it takes time. It takes 14 years to be able to do that, you know?
I mean, it's amazing.
It took you however long you've been in the NFL now, what, 13 years?
Yes, I just finished 13.
Yeah, so 13. Y'all have been about the same time. Look at this.
Yeah.
It took you 13 years to really understand, like, how you want to do certain things in the league and all of that stuff.
Nah. It's okay. John, keep driving the show.
Okay, keep driving. We have the lines open for Lorenzo. If you have comments or questions, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Lorenzo's here to 1. As we said, Thurman Thomas at 1 o'clock, Merrill Reese at 2 o'clock. Hey, Lorenzo, we start the show, and you're usually at the 2 o'clock hour, but every day we start the show with a Twitter poll just to kind of drive the conversation to get people going a little bit. And obviously we were going to talk about the playoffs coming up this week. How much time have you spent watching the playoffs so far?
Well, I watched all the games last week.
Did you really?
Yeah, I mean, I have a lot of friends around the league on each and every team, so I just kind of like to see how they play and how they progress throughout the game. And it's just, you know, it's fun to watch playoff football. You know, I'm not game planning. I have a lot of extra time, and I really still love the game. So it's kind of cool to see what other teams are doing and what makes them great. And, you know, hopefully you can learn something from those experiences.
Do you talk to them? And for me, you know, I got a lot of friends that play. I kind of wait until the off season because I know if you lose a game, whenever it is, but especially in the playoffs, you're like, man, I don't want to talk about it. And you know that you usually come back to your phone and there's like 100-plus messages. So
yeah, I don't text them right after the game. Yeah. I normally, like, hit them, like, leading up. Like, Brian Arakpo, me and him are really good friends. Mm-hmm. And obviously last week they were playing the Patriots, so just hit him up. Yeah. Like, you know, have a great game. You know, y'all should be able to get some pressure and maybe give him a couple of tidbits. But – after the game, like you said, I just let them be, because I understand, especially if you lose, you're on the losing end of it.
Right. You watch more football than Donald and I did this past weekend, right? I mean, we were talking last week, and then we came back yesterday and talked about how I just have a hard time justifying watching all four games Saturday, Sunday. It's just it's a lot of downtime.
It is, but I mean, it's not like I just sit there and just stare at it.
What do you do?
Especially if it's good. Well, I'll get up, or I might even like with the Saints game, I end up watching like one of my shows I like to watch. Because it kind of got out of hand, and then I was kind of following still on Twitter, and I said, let me turn back to it, and then, you know, kind of watch the last quarter or so.
I got you. Okay. Because it's hard. And now this weekend I'll watch both games. You'll watch both games,
only
right?
Two games. Yeah. Well, and it's coming to an end now.
Oh, you're going
to
be traveling.
I'll be in Jamaica, so I don't know if I'm going to really try to turn on football in Jamaica. Yeah, I have better things to do.
You follow them. All right. That's they won on Twitter.
Drinks and coconut shells in one hand.
Well, I'll send you guys some photos or something like that.
Yeah, we'll put them on the show.
Yeah, great. Like Donald does, you know, on the couch, but I'll be having a beach at my feet.
Man. But we want to get folks thinking about the playoffs this year. You've watched enough. We've all watched enough. And this is our Twitter poll. And this is, I think it's an interesting discussion. For years now, the discussion has been you need a franchise quarterback to go deep into the playoffs. Is this year a little bit different? It might be. I mean, I'm willing to. This is the way, when you look at the quarterbacks, you know, Nick Foles leads the Eagles into the conference championship game. That's a little bit unusual. You got Tom Brady, obviously, but you got Blake Bortles on one side. You know, is this different?
I think it's an outlier year.
Case Keenum.
Yeah, Case Keenum. I mean, I think it's an outlier year. I mean, and Nick Foles has at one point has been a pretty solid quarterback and was highly sought after.
Yeah.
Obviously, he hasn't had the consistency, but he does have the ability to lead team and put up points, throw touchdowns, minimal interceptions. Now, it's all about consistency. The other two guys, obviously, aren't those guys at all. I mean, Tom Brady obviously stands out being a Hall of Fame caliber. But, in a lot of years, there's always something that sticks out that is outside of the consistent things that you see year to year. And I think that's just another year. But it also showcases that in December, January, if you have a great defense and a good running game, that you can find yourself winning games. Because, I mean, it's hard to throw the ball when you're playing in cold winter and cold weather. And it's been cold across the country this year, so you have to be able to run it. And if you have a great defense like Jacksonville, you can overcome a lot of those things by creating more opportunities for your offense, getting the other opposing offense off the field, and just being stout and winning field position and winning, you know, low-scoring games like a Jacksonville in our case, or figuring out how to win, you know, when it's a big blowout, making that play when you need it.
Yeah. So that's the question on Twitter. Does this year's NFL playoffs, does it prove that you do not need a top-quality, top-tier quarterback to make a deep playoff run? We've got it up on Twitter. We've got pretty good traction going on this right now. More than two-thirds of you, 68%, say no, it doesn't prove that at all.
Right.
32% say yes, it does. I'm inclined to vote no. I think this is an outlier, Lorenzo, as you just said. Look, you got Brady, so set him aside. Yeah. The other three, they've kind of caught lightning, each of those three teams. I think we're in a different sort of a playoff year. But I would think that most teams need that probably a pocket-type passer, top elite-level quarterback to get deep into the playoffs. Mm-hmm. What do you think, Tom?
See, I think I go by the old adage that defense ends up winning you championships. I think that, you need to have a top-flight quarterback, and he can make certain plays for you that can get you there. But ultimately, I feel like if you don't have a strong defense and you find yourself in the playoffs having to outscore other teams, that can be tough to do in December, regardless of – if you're in a dome, you're outside. It's just hard to beat the better teams in the league. You get into the divisional rounds, you get into, you know, the championship rounds, and you're playing these elite teams, and you're trying to outscore them 40 points to 30 points, and it's like it's hard to do, you know. So I think you need to have a good defense, like Lorenzo was saying, and a strong run game. That's not saying you don't need a top-flight quarterback. Everybody would like to have that, but I think you look at some of the Super Bowls of the past. You look at the Seattle Super Bowl. Russell Wilson was a good quarterback that year, but he still had a lot to learn about passing the ball. He was running around a lot, making plays. Their defense was, at that point, the Legion of Boom, and you had Marshawn Lynch, who was beast mode at that point. They end up going and winning it. You look at the year Denver won it. You know, Denver had the bomb defense, and they shut down the Patriots in the championship game. Then they went on in the Super Bowl and won that. And Peyton Manning was a shell of himself at that point, you know. So I think if you have a strong defense, it can take you all the way and possibly win it for you.
I wonder this, too, you two, maybe you can respond to this. You need a top-level quarterback to have a good team.
Right.
But when you get to this stage and you're trying to win games week by week, you know, you can get by with some.
You can. I mean, it comes down to, again, like we're talking about, elite defense, taking the ball away, turning the ball over. Creating short fields for the offense, and then really that running game, just controlling the time. You know, if you look at this game with Jacksonville Jaguars, if Fournette can consistently run the ball and create third and short opportunities, and you control that play clock, I mean, you keep Brady off the field, and that's the best defense to go against a quarterback is making sure he's sitting on that bench and they never really create any rhythm or chemistry within the game.
You think back to the team last year, the Patriots that won it all, and everybody talks about Brady.
Right.
Brady in the Super Bowl had a bad game. Now, in the second half, he played a lot better, but they had one of the top-ranked defenses last year in the league, and that's what helped them to get them to that point. And then they also helped them to shut down the Atlanta Falcons offense once they got, you know, deeper into that game.
Yeah.
I just think a defense is important. It's really important. If you don't have a defense and you're just trying to outscore everybody, you're going to lose a game in the playoffs when you face a team that has a good defense that can slow you down.
It's our question to start the day. Do you need a quality quarterback to make a deep playoff run? You can vote on Twitter. We'd like to hear your voice on the telephone lines at 803-0550 or toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Lines are open right now. I'm having trouble, you guys, figuring out the Jacksonville Jaguars. Not because there's obviously a surprise, but how do they score 10 points and beat Buffalo in week one and then put up 45 the next week? I don't get it.
The run game, I mean, it was looked totally different. I mean, from week one to week two, it didn't look like the Pittsburgh Steelers had a great game plan or didn't execute their game plan, at least as far as stopping Fournette. And that's really the key of getting them off the field. You have to win first and second down. You can't give Blake Bortles third and manageable, so from 2 to 6, because even if you take away his first option, he's going to run and scramble, and they didn't have a spy in that game at all, it didn't look like, you know, from watching it. And he can get 5 to 6 yards easily each and every time, especially if you're in man or they played a lot of man. So, in man, as soon as they turn their backs, he's going to easily get the first down and maybe even more like he did in that game.
Well, is that what he did against the Bills the week earlier? Or what?
Yeah, a couple of times we were, you know, caught in man, and he scrambled. The defensive line, we didn't do a great job as far as our rush lanes. And you give a guy, you know, really a two-way go, he can get up in there and convert. And then one time was a broken play. I mean, he fumbled the snap.
Yeah.
Making an inside move, and it just was there for him to take very easily. Right. And it was advantageous, and it was just a great timing. Converted late in the game on the third down, and that, you know, obviously really hurt us.
That was one of them Tony Romo plays.
Right,
stuff like that, right? Yeah. Like fumble the snap and then take off and get 20, 30 yards.
Back.
Yeah, and it's like, man, what is that? And then Cowboys fans are like, oh, he's great. And you're like, that was luck. Get out of here with that, man.
Right.
But I think that the Steelers last week, I mean, it's hard to say a team came out sleeping in the playoffs, but they truly looked like they came out sleeping on the Jaguars in the first half. And then they went into halftime and was like, oh,
right,
we got to wake up now and actually come back. I mean, they went down, what, 21-0 in the first half, first quarter?
Right.
It was bad. Yeah, my father called me, who's a Steelers fan. He's like, man, I just turned on the game. They're tearing us up right now. What's going on? I'm like, yeah, y'all sleeping right now. I don't know what the deal is. And then they had to wake up. Jacksonville just came out a lot more intense than the Steelers
did. I think a lot of that had to do with our game, because we shut them down pretty well defensively as far as the run game. But they came out with a whole new attitude when they had a great game. Obviously, Yeldon, that we just saw, home, 24 in the passing game. Some of them checkdowns, you know, going 20, 30 yards on third down that you just didn't see. So you definitely have to execute with them, because Blake Bortles has some magic going on right now and is finding guys in advantageous spots and critical situations that's allowing their team to stay on the field and keep that field position in position going and finding ways to score now.
Got lines open if you'd like to talk to Donald, Lorenzo, yours truly. The phone line's open at 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. How badly do you need a quality quarterback to make a deep playoff run? You're watching that Jacksonville-Pittsburgh game last Sunday, Lorenzo, a little bit differently than most of the rest of us, because you just played the Jacksonville Jaguars. Mm-hmm. How much time do you spend during that game thinking, man, we had that stopped. How come they can't do it? You know, it's almost like we could have done that. We could have been there. I mean, how much do you, it's kind of a waste of time to do that.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, I'm at the point where we didn't do it, so right. It doesn't even matter. Yeah. And we would have been playing the Patriots, so it would have been a different, you know, setup altogether. So we just didn't make enough plays. That's what it came down to. You know, you can point out different games, whether it's the interceptions, the red zone opportunity we had to score a touchdown, and that really changes the dynamic. If you really want to beat this Jacksonville Jaguars team, you definitely have to get up on them early and make them throw the ball or feel like they have to throw the ball. Because in the second half of our game, even though it was tight, they didn't feel like they needed to throw the ball because they trusted their defense. Right. And even on, like, third and, like, some eight situations, they ran the ball on us. Yeah. When those are just, you know, you got to pass the ball. But they didn't want Blake Bortles to put him in a situation where we may throw an interception or, you know, fumble it or we get a sack. So they put the game on their defense's hands, and that's what happens when you're playing from behind versus them.
And, you know, the Patriots are a team that notoriously gets up on teams. They score. They'll get in the first possession and just go down and score on you. And then you find yourself – I think the Jaguars, they'll have to be down 21-0 before they come out of that run, you know, because they just want to keep running. They just want to keep running. You know, like they have to be down like, all right,
right.
Now we got
to
throw
it. We have
to
do it, right. Yeah. But, I mean, Belichick, I think, is going to have a great game plan for him. So, I mean, we're definitely going to say he's going to take away Blake's strengths and really make him force the ball down the field if he gets in that situation and stopping the run on first and second down.
I think people also forget, and you were asking him if he watches the game, saying, man, I wish we could have done that on that team or things like that. Fans do that all the time.
Right.
It's like, man, you just lost to a team that they beat, stuff like that. And it's like, listen, football is a game of matchups.
It is.
Certain teams match up better with other teams. When we used to play the Patriots, we matched up well with them because we just score points. And they score. It was like whoever scored last was the team that won. I mean, it really just comes down to the matchups. I think the Jaguars, with their DBs being so big and physical, they match up well with the wide receivers of the Patriots. They have small, you know, quick, shifty type of guys. If they get those hands on those guys, which is how they really want to play the game, especially Jalen Ramsey, Bouye, they can really disrupt Tom Brady in that passing game. Obviously, we know Gronk is the X factor.
Right.
How do they play Gronk? But they can really disrupt that passing game.
And that's what I'm interested to see. Will they put, like, maybe Jalen on Gronk instead of the wide receivers? Because that's not their strength. Obviously, those guys are – Brandon Cooks to take the top off. But if you can jam him, he becomes ineffective.
Right.
Gronk is really the key. That's their number one guy. Mm-hmm. And if you can take him away or take him out of the game and make him a non-factor, we were able to do it a little bit in the second time we played him. You saw what happened when Miami faced him and they didn't have Gronk. They punted a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
They just weren't the same type of offense and wasn't as efficient. So I would be – if I was the D coordinator, I might put Jalen on him.
And
just follow him wherever he's at and match up, and we're going to do whatever else to these other guys. But Gronk is not going to beat us.
And you have to look at it like, okay, Tre'Davious White got him out of his game.
Right.
And Tre'Davious White is not even talking trash like that. Jalen Ramsey wants to talk. He like a Dennis Rodman of the NFL right now. Like, he want to talk trash, you know, do all types of crazy stuff to you and possibly get Gronk out of his game, where Gronk is frustrated doing all types of crazy stuff. I mean, that could be a part of his – I'm sure it's a part of his game.
Right.
I mean, it seemed like Gronk got frustrated because Tre'Davious did such a good job on him.
Right.
And here comes Jalen Ramsey, who's longer and bigger and maybe even better equipped to handle Gronk than
Yeah, just because he's been in the league a lot longer, you know, obviously understands the game and is going to really get underneath his skin. I mean, he's probably if he's not the best corner, he's top three, corner. And then also the Jacksonville Jaguars have the ability – because of their premier rushers, to maybe even rush three and still be able to affect Brady and have another guy kind of sit for those shallow routes that they like as well with, you know, whether it's Amendola or somebody like that, one of the running backs, James White, running across underneath and take that away as well. Because obviously you never want to blitz Brady because he gets the ball out of his hand so quick. So that rush by the Jaguars should be effective as well.
You friends with Calais Campbell?
Yeah, we played together 2 years in Arizona.
The dude is a beast. Like, I feel like I never really paid attention to him until this year.
Yeah, he's a unique talent. I mean,
he's like
6'7", 12 feet
tall. Yeah, I mean, what?
Long, 300 pounds,
you
know, has great pass rush moves. I mean, he just goes over the top of a lot of guys, has great power, and he's gotten better. He's one of the guys that when he first got in the league, he played a lot of special teams and developed into what he is today.
Gotcha.
I mean, I think this is his 10th year, and under the tutelage of Brinson Buckner, who played in the league a long time too in Arizona, he's become a monster.
I thought he was the best player on the field when you guys played him in the playoff game.
Ken. Oh, not me?
Well, sorry, he was
wow,
the second best player.
Wow, man, you must be my guy.
I am your guy. All right, he was the best Jaguar.
The best Jaguar on the field.
Okay,
that's what I meant to say. All right, Lorenzo is in studio with us, so we got to be careful what we say because Lorenzo will be here till 1. You're welcome to join us as well. Phone line's open, 803-0550 and toll-free, 1-888-550-2550. Do you need a quality quarterback to make a deep run in the playoffs? We've got a couple of responses via Twitter that I'll read to you. Let's see. I'm sure that here's Huggy Bear who tweets in. I'm sure the Eagles would like to have Wentz under center than Foles, but you're making a good case to keep Tyrod for another year, which I hope the Bills do. That's not the intent of this question, to talk about Tyrod.
No.
I didn't really have that in mind.
Nobody didn't think about that at all. Because we have no clue what's going to happen there.
Right. So. That's not really what San Diego Bills backer is a quality quarterback, and the Bills beat the Jaguars, which is debatable. But the one thing that, you know, if you look at the Jaguars' playoff loss, Lorenzo, it really was a failure of offense for the Bills. I mean, 10 points isn't going to, you know, 3 points isn't going to beat anybody in this
league. Unless we, you know, hold them to zero. I mean, we could have probably done if we'd have took advantage of some other things. But, I mean, you want some consistency, and you want your offense to at least score, you know, 18 to 20 points, and that's going to give you a chance to win each and every week, we feel, as a defense, because our goal is to go 15 or less.
Right.
And we had our opportunities when we're especially down on that goal line, and that, you know, if we get down there and score instead of getting a penalty and push back, and that's kind of been our Achilles heel all year, playing behind the chains, first, second down, some type of penalty, and now we're starting, you know, first and 15, or in that case, it became first and goal at the 12 or something.
Yeah, 11 or 12.
And then your play calls as a coordinator changes. I mean, now you definitely probably pass to the ball. You know, you don't want to waste a run on second and third down. So it just hurts. His penalties hurt you, and that's what we have to do better moving forward, is not beating ourselves.
Well, you brought it up, the coordinators, and as you know, they've made the switch over the last few days, replacing Rick Dennison and bringing in Brian Daboll. From your side of the ball on your team, what do you think of that move, and what do you know about Brian Daboll?
I from what my perspective, it just lets us know it's just not all about players, that, you know, Sean and Brandon and the whole organization are going to do what's best for the team and get everybody on the same page. And if that means bringing in what we think is our better coaches that are better fit for our team, we're willing to do that. Not just rotate guys on the roster because they don't fit. We're trying to get the best staff, best players, best scouts in the building so that we can be a premier organization. As far as Daboll, I don't have any experience with him. One of my great friends I played with at Cal, Tosh Lupoy, who I believe is the outside linebackers coach in Alabama, coached with him the last couple of years. So I gave him a call. He loves the guy. Said he's very organized, and that they're going to miss him down there. So, I mean, that's all I can go off right now. It'd be great to, you know, obviously have a conversation and kind of talk to him once I meet him in the building.
I think we're going to get a chance to hear from him next week at the Senior Bowl. Our man Chris Brown is going to be covering the Senior Bowl for us down there, and he's going to get a chance to talk to Brian Daboll. Let's take a phone call for Lorenzo while he's in studio with us, co-hosting this hour. Kevin calling from East Amherst. Hello, Kevin. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, John. Thanks for letting me ask a question, Lorenzo. Congratulations on a great year. Lorenzo, just a simple question. You guys had a good defensive year, most people believe, most people have said, but if there's any weakness in your defense, one of them might have been the pass rush. So between scheme and personnel and getting comfortable with the system, what do you think are some of the things going forward that you guys can do to improve your pass defense? I'll hang up and listen.
Yeah, well, for us, we just have to be more consistent as far as getting the passer down. I mean, I think for a while we led in, like, pressures and rushes, and we weren't just getting them down. I mean, I had a chance to hit the quarterback a couple of times, and they was just, like, Derek Carr switched hands on me and threw it away at the last minute. So if you're looking at sack numbers definitely took a hit. But I feel like we were effective for a lot of the year, especially the beginning, and then we lulled in the middle because we couldn't stop the run. So you look at the Jets, the Chargers, and the Saints game, there ain't going to be no pass rush because they running the ball on us. Right. I mean, the Saints ran the ball 26 times on us in a row. And then at the end of the year, I think we picked back up. And, you know, I think with me as well, you know, being a guy that they thought they could move from tackle to end, the coaching staff, I think, has a better – and I have a better idea of how we can implement, you know, my skill set next year. And then we just got to continue to just work and get better, you know, maybe adding another inside rusher with Kyle that's very effective. Obviously, Kyle was still playing at a high level. But if you can get another guy on the inside to push that pocket and make the quarterback unable to step up and allow Jerry, because a lot of times Jerry would turn the corner, but he just couldn't finish because he would step up a little bit. Mm-hmm. So it's a couple of things there. And then also this year, we created a lot of interceptions. I mean, I know Jerry hit him a couple of times. I hit him, and the quarterback is just throwing the ball up.
Yeah.
And who comes down with it? Micah Hyde Poyer or Tre'Davious White. So it didn't show up in the stat sheet as sacks, but it definitely showed up in other ways in the game where other guys became the benefactor of, I think, what the work of the front line was doing.
What's it like? I remember when I was playing in college, I used to punt return, but when we needed to block it, I would go up and be on the rush.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember one game we're playing, and the kicker was a right-footed kicker.
Right.
Now, I rush, and I come in to block it clean, and he takes off and kicks it with his left foot. And
yeah.
I'm like, what just happened? Right. So what's it like for you when you get to a quarterback and you're about to sack him and he does something like Derek Carr?
Let me tell you that, I mean, because me and Derek Carr are real good buddies. We played a year with him in Oakland.
Mm-hmm.
And it's at the end of the game, and I made a move, and I have him, and he has the ball, and he switches and tosses it. I said, no, you didn't. I know you didn't just do that, Derek. He said, so I couldn't let you have it. I couldn't let you have it. I said, really?
Yeah.
I said, oh, man. And he just kind of shoveled it out there to the running back, and he dropped. I'm like, man, you got it. You got to do better than this, man. And Carr, and then Culler did the same thing. In the second game, we played him clean through. He just throws it up. Receiver's nowhere near it.
Yeah.
And Tre'Davious picks it off. I'm like, what are you doing? What are you doing? Do you not want me to get numbers? Like, okay, anybody can sack him, but Zoe, we got to throw it. Just throw it up. You know?
Did you ask him that? Did you ask Cutler?
Yeah, he didn't reply. He just looked at me and laughed. You know, and it's just funny. And the kid in the second game, I forgot the young guy they put in. When
Moore?
Cutler.
Was it Matt Moore?
Not Matt Moore.
In the Dolphins game?
In the Dolphins second game. Was that Matt Moore? The second game? Young kid?
Moore.
The backup? I think he's young. I don't think it's Matt. I don't think it was Matt Moore, but he did the same thing. David Fails. I'm sacking him, and he just flicks it out there. I'm like, man, this is like an epidemic. I mean, so I could have easily probably had at least three more sacks based on that, and I would put my numbers around 8-ish. But, you know, it just, you know, it is what it is. Sometimes you get them, sometimes you don't. At the end of the day, if you're affecting a quarterback and making him throw bad balls and we're getting interceptions or getting off the field,
That's what
matters.
You got to be happy with it.
You know, but then you get those, what happened this year, man? You had 12, now you had 4.
Like, if you really want to know.
I mean, a couple of times I just whiffed, you know.
Yeah.
I had Cam one time. He gave me the stiff arm.
Yeah. Oh, I remember that one.
Or just shrugs you off. I'm like, oh, man. So it happens. You know, it's football. But as long as we find a way to win and got in the playoffs this year, I mean, at the end of the day, that's what matters.
Take a phone call for Lorenzo Alexander while he's in studio with us from Fred in Rochester. Go ahead, Fred. You're on the air.
Yeah, guys. How you doing? Always a good show. Always like listening to you guys. I just wanted to say I really hope these guys in the front office and Sean keep guys like Kyle, if Kyle wants to come back, and LA, because those guys are good guys to have. They are very good leaders, and they have a very good rapport with younger guys, and that means a lot for a team. And Lorenzo is, the older you get, the better you get, and my hat's off to you, because you're right there, buddy. I just wanted to say, watch out for Jacksonville, because I'll tell you, that's a Coughlin team, and it's a Marrone team. And unlike a lot of people, I like Doug Marrone. I thought Doug Marrone was a pretty good coach. I'm sorry things went wrong in Buffalo here, but I always like Coughlin because he's an upstate guy. I mean, that guy comes from right around here. He coached at RIT in Rochester, and he coached, he's pretty local. So, but I don't, I mean, that's next to the Bills. The Bills are always number one. But I do like Jacksonville. I do like Marrone. I do like Coughlin. So thanks for taking the call. Just to listen to you. Thanks.
Thanks, Fred. Yeah, Waterloo, New York is Tom Coughlin's home, right down the road a little bit.
Oh, Waterloo. I've been through there a little
bit. Yeah, me too.
We got to get to a break here soon. But you in the playoff game, you were a little more vocal than I've ever seen.
Oh, yeah, I was chippy.
Yeah.
And I didn't really start that, though.
Mm-hmm.
Preston Brown is the king of talking trash. And
really?
He just starts it. It doesn't even – nobody even has to do anything. He's calling a dude trash, you weak. You know, you got this many fumbles. You know, he looks up all that stuff. So, and then once they chirp back, I got to jump in too with my guy, right? You know, I'm a great teammate, so I'm backing my guy up. Right. And then it just becomes fun. It becomes part of the game, having fun out there. After the game, I mean, it's kind of all, you know, water under the bridge. But it's just it makes the game more fun for me, you know. And especially at the end, you get a guy, you dump him, and then go make a tackle. Yeah. And all they can do is like, man, you got all right, me.
You got me. Now, I got this tweet from Steve Urkel. And it says, to ask you about your exchange with Jimmy Graham in the Pro Bowl last year.
Oh, yeah, that really wasn't that. Nothing. I mean, Jimmy took that. I wasn't trying to hurt him, wasn't trying to hit him hard. He's a soft tight end. I mean, it just is what it is. Wow. It is what it is. That he plays tight end. He's a former basketball player. It just is what it is. Yeah. That's just his game. It's not a knock. It's just what it is. Mm-hmm. You don't ask him to block. I mean, that's so. Yeah. And it's the Pro Bowl, so I get him. But he has to understand I'm a football player. I didn't leave my feet. I didn't try to crack him. That happens when you play football.
Yeah, you're on the football field.
Don't play in the Pro Bowl if you don't want to play. I'm sorry. I'm out there. I'm going to play the way I want me a car. No apologies for me. Get tougher. I don't know.
What's you saying about playing in traffic?
I don't know.
What's you saying about playing in traffic?
Yeah.
Something about playing in traffic.
If you want to play in traffic, then you're going to get hit.
There you go.
That's all I can say. I'm sorry. I won't be this year. I don't know if he's going.
We're going to leave that one alone.
So he doesn't have to worry about me.
All right. Lorenzo's with us until 1 o'clock today. We're going to take a break and come back with more, including Lorenzo's one-word description of some of his prominent teammates. That's coming up next, the John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show on this Thursday afternoon. John Murphy and Donald Jones and Lorenzo Alexander in studio with us till 1 o'clock.
Lorenzo, I was watching the Saints-Vikings game with my son. And the ending to the game was ridiculous. Now, anybody who's been around football kind of knows the general rule once you get into a prevent type of situation.
Right.
What happened there as you watch it on TV?
I mean, it's so many things that happened on that. And you know, it's not all on Marcus Williams. Mm-hmm. You know, you would like to have hoped that he could have made a better play. I just think the moment happened so fast. It just flashed before his eyes, you know, already feeling like you won. Oh, here's his bomb. Kind of misplayed it. You know, you would like to see him just let him catch the ball, come down in bounds, tackle him.
Yeah.
game over. You know, but the game doesn't happen like that. It happens so much faster. And then also just the underneath defenders. I don't know who it was, number 20. I'm not quite sure. I think it was number 20. Just playing deeper. I mean, because nothing else in front of them is going to really help them or get them in field goal range.
Right.
And you play top down, that's what you taught. So the combination of those two guys made it bad. And then where are the guys running to the ball, when the ball is thrown in the air? So there were a lot of people watching, you know, somewhere the backside defenders, you know, the deep defenders. Because as soon as that ball is thrown, you're supposed to break on it, teach you to break on it, because you never know what's going to happen.
Right.
So it's definitely going to be a learning lesson. I know all defensive coordinators around the league are going to show that play.
Yeah.
And this is why you run to the ball. This is why you don't play short routes or even come up with better schemes defensively to make sense in that situation around the league as well. So it's just a crazy play.
And people always complain once you get to the end of the game. Like if you guys are winning at the end of the game and the team is now on their last drive and they're driving and they're completing passes and you guys are tackling them.
Right.
And I'm always like, listen, you got to understand – the goal is to not let them score a touchdown. Just don't let them get behind you and score a touchdown.
Right.
Like, you go ahead and catch it in front of me, I'll tackle you.
Right.
And that's what they were supposed to do there, but it just didn't work out for them.
No, just badly executed. I mean, you had guys in place to make a play, and it didn't make it. And it happens. He's a young guy, you know, obviously first time in that situation. Mm-hmm. And he's going to learn from it. It's not going to define him because you also got to think, I mean, he made a play early in the game to give them a chance, you know, to be in a position where they were leading at the end. So, you know, he'll grow up from this and continue to be a great player in this league, I think.
If Marcus Williams was your teammate, what would you say to him?
Pretty much that. I mean, don't allow this to define you. You know, obviously we wanted you to make the play, but you got to learn from this, grow from this, because we plan to be back here again. You just got to be so supportive because everybody, it's easy to jump on him.
Yeah.
You know, but being a teammate, being in that locker room, you understand how hard that young man works. The attention to detail, because he had a great season for a rookie. So as a veteran, you know that, and knowing that he wasn't trying to make a mistake, and obviously it's hard in that moment, but that's what leadership is, you know, kind of overcoming your emotions and your feelings to console your teammate.
Lorenzo Alexander in studio with us. Here's Jose in Buffalo with a question for Lorenzo. Go ahead, Jose.
Hey, guys. How you guys doing today?
Good. Real great.
Two things, actually. One was I would love to have been on the field listening to Jalen Ramsey talking smack, you know, the back and forth between you guys and the Jacksonville Jaguars. Second of all, Lorenzo, play of the year, funniest play of the year in my book was watching you when Fournette had the ball when the Jaguars had the offense on the 1 yard line.
Yeah,
you stopped him. He thought he had that touchdown. He swore blind he had that touchdown, but all of a sudden you just pulled him back and said, "Nope, not today." I just think that was probably one of the funniest plays of the year in my book. So I just want to say thank you for the year. And
appreciate that.
Talk about it. Hopefully you guys can play that replay again so we can see it at home.
Yeah.
All right, well, I'm going to ask a question. Maybe the guys in the back can pull up that replay. But in that situation, is your assignment to just go up and over, or is that more of a read for you?
Well, I'm running through, but early in the week, Mike Waffle does our goal line presentation. He told us that he's a jumper. I didn't think he was going to jump because I hit it pretty deep in the backfield, but he jumped anyway. And, you know, obviously that's what everybody, they love that play. That's kind of going to probably be one of the iconic plays of me as a Bills player. But, you know, I grabbed his legs, pressing, obviously hit him too. And it was just a great team effort, team tackling, guys getting off of blocks and coming to my aid. But it was just a great play, great read. Knew that they wanted to run that play, that type of play downhill with him, and he was a jumper, so I was ready for it.
Lorenzo Alexander in studio with us till 1 o'clock today. We want to do this, Lorenzo. You, as a veteran leader on this team and now a couple of years with the Buffalo Bills, kind of have your finger on the pulse of that locker room and the various different characters in that locker room. You know them all pretty well. We want to run down a list of some of your teammates and get one word from you, and Donald, you can chip in to describe these people that you know intimately. All right?
Yeah, go ahead.
Are you ready to go?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Let's start with your buddy, Kyle Williams. One word to describe Kyle Williams.
Old.
Oh, now, it doesn't have to be the insults going through the whole thing.
No, it's not all insults. I just felt like I had to say that just because.
And was he 2 months older than you?
Because he's old. No, I'm older than him, but he's not here to say any different. So Kyle is old today because I've been called old all day or all week. So he's old too. I mean, great dude, great brother. He has an old soul, you know.
Yeah.
Almost like one of the older uncles. Obviously, me and him are the same age, but just watching him and how he took a lot of guys, new guys under his wing this year. Very cool just to watch him work and bring this team together. He was one of the heart and soul of this team as far as getting the different groups together and really blending them, especially on defense.
I had hard worker. Yeah, obviously, I played
That's
with
two words.
Him here. Well, I got a
couple of hard
words. Sometimes
it's hard
with just one word.
I
played with him, and just to watch him work, even when I was here in 2010, 11, 12, the dude worked hard, in the weight room, getting it in every day.
Yeah.
When you get some young guys that are, you know, they're trying to slide out of the workouts and stuff like that, and he was always in there showing this is how you get it done.
Because he's old. He understands that. He's been around a long time.
He was old in 2010?
Yeah, he was. So that's why he understands how to work, because he's been in this league a long time, and now he's old, and he has a lot of wisdom.
All right.
One word to describe. Let's move on to your I've got pro for Kyle Williams. I just think he's a consummate pro. One word to describe your defense coordinator, Leslie Frazier.
I would say steady. It's probably a great word for him. He's not a yeller or screamer. He doesn't get down. He's real even keel all the time, very steady at what he's going to do, and he doesn't allow emotions or the game, the flow, to really take him out of his game plan and what he wants to do.
I had a mentor. He seems like I've never really been around him that much in the locker room or anything, but he seems like a mentor. Like you're talking about, even keel, a guy who, if you make a mistake, he's going to talk to you about it.
Right.
You know, a guy who might take a younger guy under his wing and teach him how to be in the league because he played.
Yeah. And even with me, I mean, that's a great one too. Because he'll always, you know, and I'm pretty sure this is with Kyle, once in a while kind of pull you aside and kind of get you thinking about, you know, how to lead or what to say or, you know, what about this or how we're playing. You know, just little different things to kind of get you thinking outside the box or even thinking as maybe a coach. Or something that's what you want to do in the future. And he's a big Christian as well, so always spoke to me from that perspective as well, just life in general. So, mentor is a great one.
I got underappreciated because people look, I think, at the Bills' defense and figure, well, that's McDermott. That's his defense. Mm-hmm. But Sean was a real head coach here. He wasn't just buried on one side of the ball, right?
No, not at all. I mean, he came into our room once in a while, but it really wasn't like he was hands-on, the one – installing and the game plan each every week. I mean, that was Leslie's job from start to finish. Yeah.
All right. Sean McDermott. One word to describe Sean McDermott.
Regimented.
Regimented.
Yes. And very organized, structured, has a plan, has a vision, communicates it well. I think that really goes back to him as a wrestler, which you have to be in that. It's a very disciplined type of sport. So that really came through as far as how he implemented his structure and culture this year with our organization.
Wrestling will teach you a lot.
Right.
You do a move once. You got a plan going in. You do a move, and a joker hits you with something. You're like, oh, that ain't work. You know? So you got a plan and then a backup plan. Yeah. You know? I put detail-oriented, so we're around the same.
I got pretty much the same. I got thorough, for sure.
Yep.
LeSean McCoy, Shady McCoy, one word.
Debater.
Really?
Yes. Okay. If you're ever in the locker room with this guy, or if you know him, I mean, from who's the greatest, LeBron, Kobe, to, you know, what's a great quarterback, to, you know, what politics, you know, what's the right way to act, he's going to debate you tooth and nail, I mean, to the very last, and out-yell you, and just, he's just, I don't know, consuming. Oh, yeah. I mean, and he's all in on it, though. It doesn't matter if he thinks he's wrong. He goes all in on whatever side he wants to be on. He's all in, and it's aggressive.
Yeah, you're like, man, chill. Yeah. Dang, I'm just, man, does he ever give in? Like,
no.
Right. Like,
no.
After the whole thing is over, just put you to the side, like, you're right.
No. Nah? You know Shay, he's not giving in at all.
I just put good.
I put spectacular.
I put he's a good running back.
Tre'Davious White, one word to describe Tre'Davious White.
Kyle came up with this, and I thought it was great of his personality. We called him Eeyore all year. And if you ever around Trey, just kind of like, oh, woe is me, I mean, type of attitude. And I always gave him I'm like, man, cheer up, man. You got a great job, man. Have some fun with it, man. It's just like, oh, here I go again. You see him walking around.
So
we called him Eeyore all year.
That's crazy because when we had him on. He talked about, you know.
And he got his head moving.
I really
haven't
left my apartment.
This is like October.
Yeah, right. It's not even cold yet.
Yeah, right. Exactly. I put upside. I think he has a tremendous upside.
I put mature. I think he's mature beyond his years. Mm-hmm. Tyrod Taylor.
I put pro for this one.
Okay.
Because I think of myself as somebody who gets to work early. And I get here about 6:15 on most days to start my workout. And this dude is normally getting out of the shower from his workout that he's already done. So, I mean, he gets up at like 5. He's really the first one here and the last one to leave. I mean, that's probably the first guy I've ever seen that kind of hold true, just to kind of watch him work, working out in the film room, last guy to get out of the building, consummate pro, very consistent. He has his plan and regimen. You can always tell those guys because – I always told London Fletcher the same thing. I said, if I wanted somebody to kill you, I mean, I know exactly where you're going to be at every single day at this time because they just they have their plan and it works for them, and he's a consummate pro.
I couldn't think of one, but I think I'll go with pro on that one.
I put resourceful. I think he finds a way. A lot of times Tyrod finds a way to get things done. It might not even look pretty. You might think he can't do that, but he's resourceful in that way. And finally, because we're running out of time here, Joe Webb.
I call him the Juice Man. I mean, we talk about having a lot of energy, practice, music. The dude got it every day. Yeah. I don't know how – I can't keep up with him, but he made practice in certain situations always fun. He kept that lively energy, and I think it's a huge component of a team that sometimes it goes unappreciated, but being able to show up to work and have fun each and every single day, you know, grind this out, it makes it all worth it.
I put character on that one just because I've seen video him and I forgot who it was. These guys are playing the guitar and warm-ups and stuff like that.
Yeah, probably Eddie
fun.
Or probably Mike Tober.
Yeah, Mike Tober is that type of guy.
Guy, too, right.
But we got to ask you, Lorenzo Alexander.
Well, it's three words, and it's one-man gang.
Okay.
It could have been resourceful. You know, I do a lot of things well, you know. Mm-hmm. And I would challenge you to anything.
Humble.
Donald. No, I'm never that.
How are you just
going to
start coming
so, I mean, whether it was like hoop or football, bowling, golf. biking, I like old school. I just do a lot of things well, and I'm very competitive. I could have put that too. I just do a lot of things well. Yeah, and of course, who else I'm going to come at?
Well, I put old.
That's fine.
Yeah.
That's fine. I am old, and I own it, but I'm miraculously
old. You're aging like fine wine. Just
exactly. Right, 35 and still balling with these young kids. I mean, you know, these kids come. Oh, man, we love the way you play, man. You know, so, hey. Guys running fo-fos, locking them down, running with them, you know, on special teams. There ain't too many guys
when
doing
say,
that.
When you say humble, is this humble right
yeah,
now?
I'm humble when I need to be. But when I'm hanging out with you, I can't be humble, man. All right, my wide receiver swag comes out. You
Where's Shady at? Where's Shady at? I need him to come and debate Lorenzo
now. Shady on my side. That's my guy.
A couple of minutes left with Lorenzo Alexander. We're back right after this. The John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Just a couple minutes left with Lorenzo Alexander, who's joined us this first hour of the show. Thurman Thomas coming up, and we're going to talk with Merrill Reese, the play-by-play voice of the Philadelphia Eagles, coming up in the 2 o'clock hour. The Eagles getting set to play this weekend in the championship games, Lorenzo and Donald. The first game is, of course, 3.05 p.m., a little bit later than I would like, because that means you're going to have to watch football till 11 o'clock Sunday night, right?
Yeah, what's the second game?
Six something. Yeah, 6:40. Okay, 9:30, 10. Anyway, Jacksonville and New England, 3:05. Who do you guys got? Who do you got?
Go ahead, Donald.
Jacksonville, New England. I'm going to go with bold prediction and go Jacksonville.
What?
Yep.
Don't just say that to be different.
No, I'm not. I think, like I said earlier, I think the DBs can disrupt their passing game, and if they can do something to slow down Gronk, then they have a good shot. I don't think New England has played like the New England of the past this year. Even though they have a good record, I still think Jacksonville has – something. It's just going to come down to Blake Bortles.
Yeah, and that's the issue.
Yeah, right.
I mean, I think Belichick and the defense are going to have a great game plan on first and second down for Fournette and really put this game in Blake Bortles' hands and do a great job on third down and with a spy and just to kind of keep him in the pocket and figure out a way to win this game. So I'm going to go with New England, and then obviously Tom Brady. They always find some ways. I think it's going to come down to in-game adjustments, and I'm going to take Tom Brady over Jacksonville any day as far as making in-game adjustment with, you know, offense to defense ratio. And he's going to find some ways to put up some points, and they're going to keep him out the end zone.
Well, go ahead. We get
the Patriots. Some Patriots. Right. Yeah.
Patriots, me too. And before we move to the second game, the Patriots, Lorenzo and Donald, are looking at both coordinators probably leaving when their season ends. Do you think that's a weird atmosphere there? What do you think that's like?
I don't know if it's a weird atmosphere. I just know people love to be around winners. And so organizations around the league look to them, and they're going to try to poach anybody they can. And so that's what happens when you have great success over a long period of time.
Sometimes I wonder if they organizations are like, you know what, let's just take them so that you just break up that whole thing that they got going on.
It doesn't matter, man. As long as Belichick and Tom together, they got a culture that's in place and stable. Whoever comes in is going to fall right in line. They're going to keep on rolling.
Yeah. Vikings, Eagles, 6:40 p.m., Lincoln Financial Field on Sunday. What do you guys think?
I think I got to go with Minnesota on that one. I think, you know, with Case Keenum, the way he's playing, the way that defense is playing, they have a solid running game. They got some receivers that are balling this year with Stephon Diggs and other kids.
Thielen.
I think, you know, with Everson Griffin, I think they'll have too much for Nick Foles and the Eagles.
Yeah. I don't. This is going to be a tough, tight one too. So I don't know. I really don't know. If I had to think about it and go with, I'm going to go with the Eagles. I like Fletcher Cox in the middle, really helping stopping that running game with Latavius Murray. And then Darby on Thielen, he could definitely match up with him and shut him down and give Case Keenum some issues where he has to maybe go through his progressions a little bit more. Because definitely quarterback to quarterback, I like Nick Foles a lot better just because I've played against him. I'm more comfortable. I know what he can do versus Case. So I'm going to go with the Eagles in a close game, 2017.
Okay. Hey, Lorenzo, thanks for this. Have a great trip to Jamaica.
You'll be in Jamaica. You'll see my tweets after the games. And
That's fine.
Either or. I know you'll be busy, but you'll
get back
to it at
some point. It's a toss-up, man. I mean, I picked the Saints last week, and they ended up losing.
Too.
Yeah, I mean, miraculously. So if something like that happens, you know, I'm okay with that.
All right. You never know.
Yeah.
I don't know how people bet.
Yeah,
on
you
football.
Don't. Yeah, I don't know how they bet at all. I like my money. So I'm never something I can't control at all.
No.
Have a great trip. Happy anniversary, and we'll get you back in here when you're back in town. Thank you.
Oh, yeah. Appreciate you guys.
Lorenzo Alexander joining us in studio. Coming up next, Thurman Thomas, a Hall of Fame running back. We'll talk with him about the playoffs, too. It is the John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Radio Network Sports Update.
Quiet day at One Bills Drive. The Bills' next thing on their agenda is next week's Senior Bowl with the head coach and the general manager and most of the coaching staff headed to Mobile, Alabama. The Bills made a roster move yesterday, signing a reserve future free agent safety Kelsey McCray. He was a special teamer with the Seattle Seahawks in 2015 and 2016. Originally came into the league in 2012 as an undrafted rookie free agent for the Miami Dolphins. Kelsey McCray, safety, signed by the Bills yesterday. Patriots quarterback Tom Brady suffered an injury to his right throwing hand in a minor collision in practice yesterday. A source said it is possible the injury could affect him slightly. A second source says Brady's hand should be okay. He was officially limited in practice yesterday, according to the Patriots participation report. The Jets late yesterday fired offensive coordinator John Morton after just one season, and that came after head coach Todd Bowles praised Morton at the end of the season. But Bowles felt Morton was too reliant on the pass, a sentiment echoed in the Jets locker room. Gene Steratore will be the referee for Super Bowl 52. The announcement came late yesterday. It will be the first Super Bowl for the veteran official who came into the league in 2003. And the NFL's officiating play-by-play grading system, Steratore, had an excellent year, according to sources. The Buffalo Sabres, back from their bye week, play tonight against the Rangers at Madison Square Garden in New York. It's a nationally televised game that faces off at 7:30 tonight. Nathan Beaulieu did not practice with the team yesterday. He is day-to-day with an illness. And college basketball, the Niagara Purple Eagles continue their hot streak tonight. They bring their four-game win streak on the road against the Bobcats of Quinnipiac in Connecticut. 7 o'clock tip-off there. The Eagles 7-2 in their last nine games, including the four-game win streak. Their 11-8 record on the season, the Niagara basketball best record since 2012-2013. Niagara and Quinnipiac tonight, 7 o'clock in Connecticut. That is the update from One Bills Drive, the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts. John Murphy, Donald Jones, Lorenzo Alexander joined us first hour. This hour, happy to have the Hall of Famer, running back Thurman Thomas, in studio with us. Yes, sir. Something troubling you?
It looks like it, right? He has that face.
They fired Johnny Martin because he passed too much?
Yeah, that's what
they
said.
It's a passing league, and they're probably going to draft a quarterback?
That's the Jets we're talking about here. Yeah,
that doesn't make sense.
No, I know.
Wow.
It says, member, this is ESPN report. Bowles felt Morton was too pass-reliant. Several players unhappy with play calling. Members of the coaching staff clashed with Morton, expressed concern about his ability to design and execute a consistent game, running game.
So, you know, Todd Bowles seems like more of an old-school type of coach. He wants to run the ball. I mean, they still have to draft the quarterback. Coach. Yeah, he's a defensive coach. You got to draft the quarterback because you need a franchise quarterback down there. But ultimately, he's like, even if you draft one, we don't know how this kid is going to play out. We need to have a consistent run game.
And how is their offensive line? And who are their running backs?
Right.
I mean, I know Matt Forte is there, but Matt is, what,
not
third?
Long,
right,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So, anyway.
It's the Jets.
It's the Jets.
And people would say that about the Buffalo Bills in recent years. Bills changed coordinators, Thurman, in the last week or so. What did you think of that move? Rick Dennison out and Brian Daboll in. What did you make of that?
Well, you know what? You never like to see anybody get fired. I mean, that's just – I mean, especially being here for 1 year. I don't know if he brought his family here or not. Right. So, I mean, it's always difficult for a coach and a player to be here 1 year and then have to relocate. But you know what? He's been in the league for a number of years. And I think if you look at the overall scheme all year long, I think they had to make a change. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, it just got to this – into the regular season year where you know it was going to be predicted. Throwing first down, running on second down. I mean, that was just kind of how the last five or six games went. And as you're bringing home a Western New York native from St. Franny, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, the last thing I remember about him was getting cursed out on a national championship game. Or was it the game before that? On the sideline. Yeah. It was the game before that, national championship game, right? Against Clemson.
Against Clemson.
He got chewed out big time. And then Lane Kiffin interrupted and said something on Twitter about it. Get used to it or whatever.
You know what? I'm not going to lie. A lot of people don't like Lane Kiffin. I love it. I'm sorry. I love him just talking trash about Nick Saban, all of that stuff. I love it.
Well, you know, I think now that you have an offensive coordinator, I mean, you got Nate Peterman. Don't know if you're going to bring back Tyrod or not, but obviously everybody around Western New York thinks that you're going to draft a quarterback. And so this will be, you know, starting from scratch with the quarterback, you know, in a new offense. And all three guys will be learning a new offense. So good start for him, and glad he's back home.
I don't know. I think everybody here thinks they're going to draft the quarterback. Mel Kiper and the boys have us taking a corner.
Yeah.
You know, so
corner and a defensive tackle.
And a defensive tackle. Yeah.
No
yeah.
quarterback?
No.
Not in the first two.
Not in the first two.
Hey, how many coordinators, offensive coordinators, did you have here? I'm thinking two. Teddy Marchibroda, Tom Bresnahan. And then was there somebody? Oh, yeah, you had Pendry and those guys.
Yeah, so I had three.
Three? That's not bad.
That's not bad, but I mean.
But how difficult is that when you're switching schemes like that?
Oh, it's difficult. Yeah. I mean, just the language is more different than anything. Right. I think you can always be like the same play, but it's just totally different terminology. Yeah. You know, it was – so, yeah, I only had three in my career, I think. And but the first two were – it was Ted Marchibroda.
Yep.
And then
Bresnahan,
and he kind of kept the same offense.
Sure. Yeah.
And then when Joe Pendry came, he changed it up a little bit. So, I think it's difficult for. I mean, it's going to be a long off season for those guys. It's going to be meeting a lot of time. And but you know, it's good. I mean, you hate that it's the fifth offensive coordinator in the last 5 years. Yeah. I think it is. I mean, that's head scratching. There.
You know, here's the thing. you were pretty good in your days. And you struck me as a guy who had a personality. did you get to a certain point in your career when you switched, and you're talking about changing the terminology, where a coach might come in and say, all right, we're going to run this, this, and this, and you're like, that's power. Like, why can't we just call it power?
Oh, yeah, definitely. That was Pendry when he came here. It was like, power, okay.
Yeah.
You drafted Antoine Smith. It's power. You want a power game. You
right.
know? Why you got to put all this language in here when you just call it, you know, 36 power, 38, 37 power?
Yeah.
Instead of going twins right, double shift, move, whatever, yeah, it's a power play, you know, instead of calling it something else.
Especially when your group were here for a long time, offensive lineman, you,
right.
a Jim. I mean, why would you change the terminology, right? It's
yeah.
easier for one guy to change, the coach, than everybody else. Isn't
yeah, I think it was later on. I think it was
after
what? Maybe 96,
when Pendry came in,
97, somewhere around there. So, and then we had offense. I mean, we didn't have the same offensive alignment that I had the first 5 or 6 years. So terminology was so much different. You know, we had Ruben at that time and Corbin Lucena and, Jerry Krabs.
Yeah, Condo.
Yeah. So,
the so
offensive
big.
Lineman.
They had a house, Donald.
Yeah.
Yeah, they had house. Ballard, and then they got a bigger guy.
Yeah.
And
they called him the Condo.
So, hold on. You had House, and you had a bigger guy, you call him the Condo.
Condo, yeah.
That's hilarious. That's like one of my linemen in high school. Huge dude. They call him Tiny.
So, it's – I mean, obviously he's been a coordinator for a number of teams, a number of years. But, you know, hey – I'm happy for him to be here.
I love the fact that he knows the AFC East. He's been with Miami.
He's been with Miami.
He's been inside the Patriots a couple of different times.
Right.
Isn't that what you want? Somebody who can who can tell you, not just guess, but tell you this is what Belichick does.
You're looking at that list right there. I mean, he got two Super Bowl rings and a national championship ring or something like that. I mean, something in there. He got a couple of things, right?
Dude, his last 2 years have been great.
Right.
I mean, the Super Bowl, then the national championship.
Yeah.
Let's add, you know, some bonus money.
And
on
then
top 02 of,
to 06, wide receivers coach. So he was there. So he got about 4 or 5 championship rings.
The one thing I do like, though, he's been a coordinator. He's been a tight ends coach. He's been a quarterback coach. He's been a wide receiver coach.
He's seen it all.
Yep.
And he should know what he has once they get the draft and the free agents here. You know, he'll know what he has. Yeah. Looking at every different position, he'll understand, okay, this guy can do this right here, and this guy can do that.
I always wonder, when you have these coaches that leave New England, knowing that that system works so well, but they have that quarterback. But that system works so well, will he try to bring that type of system here? You know, I always wonder with a Josh McDaniels, who's their coordinator now, or even a Matt Patricia, who's going to go and leave and say, you know what, I'm a defensive coach, but that system we had in New England, that was a pretty good system. I want to run that system here. I always wonder if he's going to try to do that here.
Well, he might have a system that he knows that can beat that defense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, I mean, that's
– Thurman Thomas in studio with us. Let's take a phone call for Thurman. Izzy from North Carolina. Hello, Izzy. You're on the air with us.
Hey, how are you guys doing today?
Okay.
I just wanted Murph to talk a little bit about yesterday, you know, when you were talking about Ted Marchibroda. You know, Ted Marchibroda was a very good teacher. And it's too bad that we didn't make him head coach and Marv Levy stepping up into the front office. I think that the Driscoll, he's the kind of coach. I mean, what do you think, Thurman?
You mean Dable?
Yeah, Dable, yes.
You think he's what kind of coach?
He's the same kind of teacher, like Mark.
Oh, okay. Okay.
No, I mean, I think he fits right in the category where all the rest of the coaches. All those guys are great teachers that McDermott has on his staff right now. I think that's why they were competitive in every single game except a couple because the coaches that he have on his football staff are great teachers.
Now, here's the question, though. If you're the offensive coordinator, your job is to scheme up each week.
Each week.
How much teaching are you doing as the offensive coordinator?
I think you're – you know what? I think nowadays you're letting your coaches coach more than back then. Right. I mean, I know when I played here for a number of years.
It was just scheme.
It was scheme, but our – I mean, my coach, Elijah Pitts, he was a running game coordinator, you know. So they let him handle that. Marv Levy handled the short yardage goal line situation. So they let him coach, and whatever the scheme you decided that you wanted to run or whatever running plays, that's what we did. Mm-hmm. And we only ran about five or six different running plays any time.
Right.
So,
hey, let me ask both you guys. Both played on the offensive side of the ball, and – you know, and the game has evolved, obviously, since you both played. But for an offensive coordinator, what percentage of his job is play calling and what percentage is everything else? I happen to think, just from the outside looking in, that it's the everything else. It's the game planning, the design of the offense. It's stuff that can get done now in February, March, and April as far as designing an offense. I think that's just as important, if not more important, than what you do on third and two from the 13-yard line. Am I crazy?
No, I think when you're the coordinator, it's game planning. It's a lot of stuff throughout the course of the week that you have to make sure is in place for the game. You know, it's not just play calling on game day. Now, mine is a little bit different because when I was here, the head coach was the offensive coordinator.
Right.
You know, so he was doing a lot of different things at one time. Thurman, you might be a little bit different. But even when I go back to college, the offensive coordinator – He did a lot of just game planning. He let the rest of the coaches coach their positions. But his thing was, I need to make sure we have the plays in place. He was also the quarterback's coach as well, though. So he coached the quarterbacks. And you'll get offensive coordinators work with the quarterbacks, obviously, a lot more than everybody else.
What do you think, Thurman?
Well, I think it makes it a lot even when you have the players.
Yeah.
When you have the players that when you have players at every single position, wide receiver, tight end, running back, and you have that quarterback, I don't think you have to do a lot of game plan. It's pretty much wherever you call.
Right.
With the players that I have, it's going to work. Mm-hmm. It's going to work. And I think if you have the right amount of players in the right position to do things – it makes it a little bit more easier for the offensive coordinator because you don't have to worry about so many – he can call whatever play. Because you look at all these offensive – everything is script. Mm-hmm. Right. They have everything. I mean, third and six, third and two. I mean, it's all there. And I mean, you don't have 100 plays in one game. You have 25 to 30 plays maybe in a game. Mm-hmm. So I think with the players that you have, it makes it totally much easier than to call a football game.
It's always funny because people, when you're watching on TV and you see the coach with the script, you see all of these different plays. But really, that's just a bunch of different categories.
Right.
With the same plays in each category. Distance, like, okay, it's down. Yeah, down a distance.
Down a distance.
All right, third and two, we're going to run this play. We run the same play on first and 10, but it can work on third and two as well.
Here's what got me thinking about this because, obviously, Rick Dennison was fired last week. And, you know, we're out in the community, all of us, and people say, oh, I'm glad after that call, that play call down on the goal line at Jacksonville, how could he call that? And I'm thinking – that's not a reason, I don't think, unless it's egregious, unless it's ridiculous, that's not a reason to replace a coordinator, a certain
play
call. Any one play. No. I think it has more to do with what are we asking our guys to do, who do we have, and what are we asking them to do on a general basis, what does our playbook look like, what is our philosophy on offense, not what are you calling on, you know, third and one from the 13-yard line, is it?
Yeah, no. The one play.
Because people get so hung up on that.
People definitely get hung up on that.
That's why they fired Rick Dennison that play.
People were so happy that he was fired, you know, and I'm like, well, and I'm not trying to defend him or any of that stuff, but at the same time, look at the limitations that, number one, at quarterback.
Yeah.
You know, when you don't have the players, as Thurman is talking about, when you have certain players, it makes it a lot easier. He didn't have really what he needed. I mean, he didn't have the true franchise quarterback. He didn't have a number one wide receiver. The guy you brought in to be your number one wide receiver got hurt. He was playing hurt the rest of the year. Everybody was saying, you got to be more creative. You got to be more creative. I think he was just trying to do the best that he could. And I would love, in certain situations, he would have called a different play as well. But I've never been an offensive coordinator. I don't know what it's like to call plays with a limited offense that they have.
I mean, if you're Rick Dennison, you come in here, first thing you look at is the past 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
These are not run zone blocking type of guys.
Yeah.
Right. That I think that was the first mistake right there, mm-hmm. changing right. that. And then, you know, you got late in the year, then you changed it and went back more to a power game.
Right.
That shouldn't have been changed at all because you don't have the type of offensive lineman that you have mm-hmm. to run a zone blocking like out of Denver or whatever.
Right,
you know,
right.
those guys, they've been running that for the last 15 Ever. Years, yeah. 20 years.
Yeah.
You cannot bring in, and if you look at their offensive lineman, they're probably 6 foot, 300, mm-hmm. you know, 295, light guys. Man, Richard Incognito, what, 330?
Yeah.
I mean, Eric Wood is over 300. I mean, you got a bunch of big guys that are over 300. That zone blocking is just not going to work for those type of guys. And that's yeah. and I think that was kind of the first mistake
yeah.
that he made.
I agree, and that's exactly yeah. what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
That's a bigger – if you're going to write the postmortem on why Rick Dennison is no longer here, that's where I'd start.
That's what I'd start,
would
too.
Why would he change a successful blocking scheme and right. try to plug these square pegs into round holes? Not what he called on a goal line situation yeah. or a third and short yardage
I think it all started right at the yeah. beginning of the training camp with what he wanted to do.
Right.
Bringing that type yeah. of offense from Denver to Buffalo, it just wasn't going to work.
Right. Thurman Thomas in studio with us, Donald Jones and I here, and let's take a phone call from Bill in Niagara Falls. Hello, Bill. Welcome. You're on the air with us.
Thank you. I'd like to say, ask Thurman a question. I watched Bill for a long time and a lot of creative plays, but one thing he did was go up the middle and look like he got nothing and get 4 yards. And I'm wondering how he got those 4 yards on a bland play, mm-hmm. 4 yards on a bland play going up the middle.
Herman, 4 yards on a bland play going up the middle. Do you recall plays like that or how you did that?
Oh, yeah, a lot of them.
Yeah.
Just happens.
Probably got over about 3,000 yards doing plays like that. You know, Ken Hall, Jimmy Richter, John Davis, straight up the middle, you know.
Fall forward.
Fall forward, yeah. That was, you know, and that was one of the teaching points that Elijah Pitch told me when I first got here, you know. One thing you want to try to do all the time, and this is the professional level instead of the college level, is fall forward.
Mm-hmm.
And, man, I always wanted to do that. Every single play that I got, I wanted to fall forward, never fall backwards,
right.
always fall going forward. And like you say, I probably got about 3,000 to 4,000 yards just That's running right between the guard, you know, the two guards and just falling forward.
You know, as we talk about the coordinators, and I tweeted this out maybe last week or something like that, and it was about hiring these revolving coaches, the same coaches
right.
that you've been seeing for a long time. And you'll hear certain organizations or a head coach say, we want a veteran coordinator, or we want even a veteran head coach or something like that. And my thing is, when you bring these veterans in, and we're talking about Rick Dennison, he's been in that zone scheme for a long time. So when you bring these guys in, and that's all they've been in for so long, I mean, it's hard to say, all right, now we're going to run power, because this is my specialty right here. I've been running zone for a long time, so you want me to go to power now? I don't really – not that I don't know it, but I'm not used to calling that, you know?
Right.
So this is why I always say you need to hire new coaches that can adapt, you know, new coaches that want to be – that not want to be there, but that – want to be able to adapt and actually build their own thing. This is what I'm used to running, and these are the players that I want to help develop in this scheme that I'm actually developing.
And now, as I kind of think about it right now, what does Carolina run? Power.
Right.
They run power.
I'd like to just add that a lot of players feel like they'd like to fall forward, but how did Thurman be able to fall forward so effectively?
Just balance. Balance and just knowing the play and knowing the blocking scheme, really knowing the blocking scheme, really, of where my offensive linemen are going to be or yeah. they're going to be pulling. Because some plays you would pull, some plays you wouldn't pull. I mean, there were just different times where we just did a lot of different things. That's why I was in the offensive lineman meeting a lot during my career, just to kind of hear the calls mm-hmm. and not really get it at the line of scrimmage and, oh, Jimmy Richter's pulling. Well, if I hear a certain call, I'll know that Jimmy Richter is pulling or whether Jimmy Richter is staying right there, because Ken Hall would call a different
right.
different type of blocking scheme. Whatever he would call, I knew, okay, Jimmy Richter or John Davis might be pulling. Or you know what? No, they're just going to go straight because yeah. Kent can't get to that guy. They're going to come off of him. Jimmy Richter come off with Kent on a double team, and Jimmy going to come off on a linebacker or something like that. So the different calls and everything, that's why I was able to fall forward a lot, because I actually knew the scheme and knew the defense of how they were going to, if they were going to slant to the left or they're going to slant to the right, or they were going to try to do a power move. So a lot of studying and stuff like that, you learn that.
Did Bill just shock you? I didn't know he was still on the line. He started talking to me, and I was like, oh, he was off too with this. Yeah. All right.
That was my bad. That was my bad. Hey, he did ask you a question about your running style, Thurman. Every once in a while, I will see a back playing now who, you know, he'll make a certain move, and I'll think that kind of like what Thurman used to do. You used to have the ability when you were playing of kind of making yourself small going through the hole, and sometimes even going through a hole sideways. Right? Did you? Was that on purpose? Was that instinct?
No, it was kind of a little bit of both, I guess. A little bit of both.
Am I wrong? You would go through sideways.
Yeah, I would go through sideways. Yeah, trust me, there's a ton of people to go. How you go through the hole sideways?
Frank Gore's like that.
Frank Gore's exactly like that. Yeah, exactly, right. Like that.
In fact, that's what it reminded me when I saw Frank Gore watching the Colts this year, that he kind of runs like Thurman.
Yep.
We didn't talk about that on the show.
Yeah. So I kind of got that way. Back when I was at Oklahoma State, because, man, we ran a ball just straight up the gut. I had 35 carries.
Yeah.
32 of them were just between the guards. I mean, just straight up. I mean, and, you know, you try to find different ways to get yards, you know, and I think that at that time, you know, you kind of get small and go sideways best you can and before you try to straighten yourself up. So, I mean, it's kind of instinct, but then after a while, you know, just kind of like, oh, you know what? I can do this and go sideways and go.
Did it, when you first started to do it, did it slow you down? Did it feel like
slowing you down, trying
to turn and go sideways?
As long as I got positive yards, I was good. Yeah, that's all I cared about. Yeah, that's all I cared about was getting positive yards. It slowed me down a little bit. Yeah, it slowed me down a little bit, but I was just always taught to get positive yards all the time.
When I was younger, even in college, every time I caught the ball, I wanted to score. And I remember when I got here, learning from different people, and they were like, hey, man, pick and choose your battles. You catch a ball in the middle of the field, you might want to go down, you know, and because it's a lot of dudes coming at you. So at what point in your career did you say, all right, not every run is going to be a touchdown? You know, some runs I'm only going to get 3-4 yards or something like that. At what point in your career did you figure that out?
You know what? I think I kind of figured that out in college. Mm-hmm. I think I kind of figured it out in college. Yeah, it wasn't something that I, like, my third year in the league. My thing was, hey, if I can hit that home run, fine. Yeah. You know, but if I can get 5, 10, or 15 yards, that was good too. Right. But, I mean, I really wasn't that fast either. Right. So I couldn't really hit that home run a lot. So
you were a single hitter.
I was
hitting
for, I hit for average, not power. Yeah, you know? That was me there. Yeah, I lived to see another day, another down, some more series, you know. That's what mine was.
Bringing a pinch runner.
Exactly. Kenny Davis. Kenny Davis, come on in here, you know. Yeah, let's do this.
Got a call for Thurman from Tom in Rochester. Go ahead, Tom. You're on the air with us.
Gentlemen, it's always a pleasure. And Thurman, I first want to – I know you get tired of these accolades, but thank you.
No, I don't.
I appreciate it. You know, we all need to hear good stuff, and it is such a cool thing that you've been behind this damn team longer after being an active Bill than you were, you know, when you were playing on the team. And I want to thank you for everything you guys did. I know you had a whole different collection of players, that, you know, because there wasn't a lot of free agency back then. However, my father's listening. He coached football. I'm in a medical cab here in Rochester, kind of trying to make a buck here, Therm. Mm-hmm. But he coached for 15 years, and guess what his nickname is, Thurman?
Thurman.
Coach.
You got it, boss.
So which one?
Hello to the coach. That'd be great. And then I had a real quick question.
Yeah.
So you got to say hello to Coach.
Hey, Coach. How's it going, Coach?
Good. Okay.
If you – Mr. Dennison's gone now. Okay, life goes on. Lord knows. If you were the offensive coordinator, when we got that full set of downs, and you know where I'm going with this, and we have a running game per se, and we didn't have one running play. I guess one was an option for a run or a pass, whatever Tyrod, you know, chose. Mm-hmm. I was out of my – I flipped my lid, man, because we didn't pound it in at the, from the one.
Well,
it,
they, but then they were back at the 12, so after the penalty, so that was a little bit different situation, right?
Didn't run it – I don't know. I would have just pounded it one, two, three, and what happened to the old days? And then I'll shut up. That's a miracle. You know me. Whatever happened, diving over the pile. You know, the Cats don't do that anymore. But, right. Thurm, thanks very much, and I will listen to – you know, what plays would you have called if you were the OC?
He asked Thurm.
You got Kelvin Bench. Look, I would have run it from the 1.5-yard line. After that, you're 12 yards back. It's a different story. I would have run it on first down. He chose not to. That's not a fireable offense. You got Kelvin Benjamin. Use him.
It was a run pass option for a reason. All right. It's hard. First of all, it's hard to run on that team.
Yeah.
And it's hard to run on the goal line, too. People think, oh, you're on the goal line. You got to just pound it in there. It's not that easy. Everybody's right there. You're running into a brick wall. And if you want to run it in there with LeSean McCoy, I mean, it's hard to do. So that's why you go with, and you could put Tolbert in, you know, and let him try to pound it. But that's why you do a run pass option. Because if you want to stack everybody in here, we got a dude out there that's 6'5", 6'6". And we can throw the ball up to him. The play just was not executed, and you got the pass interference, which made it worse.
Yeah, I think we talked about this last week.
Again.
I wish it would have been on the other side.
Yeah.
Tyrod throwing to this side instead of coming over his body this way. Because when you look at that pass, it sailed this way.
Right. Yeah.
It sailed this way. So if you have an opportunity to throw this way, it goes that way and gives him an opportunity. But to make matters worse, he got Jalen Ramsey over there.
Yeah.
He's 6'5", too, or 6'4", whatever he is. So, I mean, you got two guys that are really tall. And I
think that's a play that a lot of coordinators allow for their quarterbacks to make that decision. All right? If you have the playmaker on the outside, you allow for your quarterback to read that defense. All right, everybody's in here. Let me go ahead and go out there. If there's an extra safety help out there, then we'll go ahead and run this thing. But that's the reason why you have a Kelvin Benjamin on the team or a Dez Bryant or a Julio Jones on the team. So that those guys, I think that my guy can make a play on your guy. You don't expect for it to be a pass interference and now you got to move back 10 yards. This is not something that you think about. Especially offensive pass interference. You might say, all right, the worst kind of worst, we get a defensive pass interference and we can do it again. You don't think it's going to be offensive. Now we got to move back 10 yards.
Right. Here's one more call. Jerry and Webster, who has a similar question, I think. Jerry, go ahead.
Well, John. Hi, John, Don, and Thurman. Actually, I want to change the subject a little bit. Everybody talks about what happened on the one-yard line in that Jacksonville game. And to me, that didn't upset me half as much as what they did just before half. They get the ball around their 15-yard line. And Jacksonville has three timeouts. It's like a field position type game. And what do? We pass incomplete. Pass incomplete. Pass out of bounds. They've got three timeouts. We punt to them. The punt's not that great. They get great field position. And that was the first drive where Bortles found out that he could get big yards running in that drive. I'm saying we should have tried to run the clock out and not lead them timeouts to get back to 3 points, because I feel like we kind of gave them 3 points at the end of the half.
Well, I see your point, Jerry. And others would say you got to be aggressive. Let's go for it. You know, you got the ball in decent field position here. Let's go for it a little bit.
Yeah, but that's not the way they've been playing the game all day.
Right. I say this, Jerry.
You know what I'm saying?
I know what you're saying. If you'd known you're not going to get a touchdown, it was going to be 10-3. That's nobody wanted
saying.
That game.
Let's
to play
just say
out
you
like
didn't
that.
Give him the 3 points. You still lose 7-3. I mean, you still lose.
There you go. Yep. And you be playing New England,
right?
Yeah, instead of Pittsburgh. So I mean, it's
all right, Thurman. Yeah. We're hashing over the playoff game for the Bills, and we got to get your take on these upcoming games this weekend. First of all, on Minnesota, their win. You watched it Sunday, I presume. How they won on Sunday?
Yeah, it still wasn't exciting as it was the Ravens Bengals game. That was more exciting. Yeah. It was more exciting for us.
Sure
I mean,
was.
That and really, you know, it's very unfortunate. What's the guy, Marcus Williams?
Yeah,
I mean. Guy's a rookie. I mean, in this day and age, man, I mean, you make one critical mistake, man, people will ride you forever. And they don't even talk about the interception that he had in the third quarter.
Right.
You know, it's that play right there. And I just feel bad for the guy. I sent Drew Brees a text and told him to give him a hug, man, from me, man. Because, I just feel bad for the guy. I mean, he's getting roasted. I mean, and
he had a good year.
He had a great year. He had a great year, man. And this is what, you know, and now he has to answer this question probably for the next couple of years. You know, especially if, you know, New Orleans get back into the playoffs or whatever. I mean, that's the only way that's going to be resolved, to get into the playoffs and maybe go and win a Super Bowl. That's the only way that you're going to forget it.
I hope they do, because who do we have on? And they wrote a book, and it was about the bad side of plays like that. I can't remember who it was. We had him on, and they wrote a book.
The guy from Fox, right? The anchor from Fox Sports?
It might have been, yeah. And he wrote this book, and he would end up in that book. If he never gets another shot in the playoffs or something like that, or to win a Super Bowl, that play is going to haunt him forever. You know, we had a shot. I thought the Saints were going to go to the Super Bowl and actually had a chance to win it. And I'm sure they thought the same thing. And he, as a rookie at that point in the game, he probably just, you know, let his guard down. Because you're like, all right, we got this one. We got this one. And then all of a sudden you get that play and it happens like that. And you're on your back looking and this dude is running down the sideline. That can be one of those plays that can affect him mentally for the rest of his life. So I hope he's able to bounce back and make some more big plays to help that team win a Super Bowl or another team win a Super Bowl.
It was Kurt Menefee, right? You wrote the
book. It was Kurt Menefee,
yeah.
I don't want the Vikings to win.
Why?
I just don't.
That was like.
I just. Hey, let them be 0-4 with us.
Oh, I see. Okay. All right. You know, that makes sense.
You got it, man. I'm just saying, you know. But I don't want Philly to win either.
Why?
But I don't want New England to win either. And I don't want the Jags to win either. Right,
well. So what are you doing?
I don't know. I really don't care. I'm looking forward to the football. Pro Bowl.
Nobody looks forward to the Pro Bowl.
Pro Bowl, the Senior Bowl.
I don't know. I mean, if it's going to be New England, let it be Tom Brady
and then walk
and just walk out of here. Yeah. Because obviously something has happened down there. They're probably going to lose the defense and offensive coordinator. Yeah. Something is happening down there. So if this is going to do it, let them do it. Walk away.
Yeah.
Philly, I just don't like the Philly fans. I'm just not crazy about them. I got my cousin. His dad is a big – he's been calling me all year long until Carson Wentz got hurt. Mm-hmm. And then he hasn't called me since. Minnesota, 0-4. And I definitely don't want old St. Doug getting one.
Are you planning on going to the Super Bowl?
I'm not sure.
Okay.
I'm not sure. It's cold down there.
Yeah.
It's freezing down there. It's like minus whatever.
Yeah.
That's not fun. Right?
No, not at all.
Yeah.
All right. Well, maybe we'll talk to you here next week then.
Yeah, I'll be around.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll be around.
Thanks, Thurm. Thanks for coming in.
No problem, man.
The Hall of Famer, Thurman Thomas, joining us for a long time in studio here today. Donald and I back with more in a moment. The John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Yeah. Welcome back to the show. We've had a good show so far. Lorenzo Alexander, noon to one. Thurman Thomas, the last half hour or so. This is quality radio here, Donald. You can't do much better than this, I don't think. What do you think?
I don't think so. I mean, maybe.
I'm going to try in the remaining hour and 18 minutes of the show. Coming up at 2 o'clock, Merrill Reese, the longtime play-by-play voice of the Philadelphia Eagles. He's been calling Eagles play-by-play since 1977. And he's getting a chance to get in the NFC Championship game this week.
Where were you in 1977?
I was a student at Syracuse University.
Wow.
Yes. And you were?
I wasn't even thought of. Yeah. Another 10 years, and I came about.
This came up today, Donald. Mel Kiper, and if you don't know, just tune into ESPN. And within 2 minutes, they'll let you know that Mel Kiper has issued his first mock draft for this year. Mel Kiper's 2018 NFL Mock Draft 1.0. And as Lorenzo said, there's going to be 3 or 4 or 5 more iterations of his draft before draft day. Mm-hmm. The draft is April 26th down at the Cowboy Stadium. So we have about 3-plus months until the draft. But you know how this goes. The draft experts, Mel Kiper, Todd McShay, Mike Mayock to a lesser extent, some of the others, have mock drafts where they pair up teams with the players. And even in his first – this is Mel Kiper's first mock draft for 2018. He says the evaluation is particularly tough this year. He's been focusing on quarterbacks. It's a little bit different. There's a mixed bag of quarterbacks. And he also issues a couple of caveats. He said teams are still early in their evaluations. No team has a draft board yet. No question about that. Mel says there's a long time until the draft. You got free agency to get through, so it's hard to really assess what a team's needs are. As far as underclassmen, in his mock draft of 32 selections, Mel Kiper has 24 of the 32 first-round picks as underclassmen, leaving room for 8 seniors. What do you think of that development, Donald? That seems about par for the course, but what do you think of that?
I think
underclassmen dominating the draft.
I think that is normal now. I think it's getting to be more and more as you have so many people complaining about how come college players are not getting paid? And all of these coaches are making so much money. The schools are making so much money. You're starting to see so many college players decide to not play in their bowl games. I think you're going to have a lot more of these juniors that are coming out that have had good seasons. They're going to say, well, why would I come back and get hurt? And then you have some guys that have gotten hurt in the past, maybe coming back in their senior season or get hurt playing in a bowl game, something like that. These are things that these college kids think about. And if I just had this crazy junior year, I might as well go right now while I'm hot. I might as well go and be a first rounder, and then I can develop in the NFL. Why would I come back for another year? But you have some players like the kid Love from Stanford who decided to come back. I think you're going to see more and more kids come out their junior year, and it's going to make events like the Senior Bowl really non-existent, which is tough. But you just have all of the best players want to come out in their junior year.
Mel Kiper, first overall pick, obviously the winless Cleveland Browns. He has them in a surprise. Most people would call this a surprise. Wyoming quarterback Josh Allen, who is going to be at the Senior Bowl, he's got them going to the Cleveland Browns with the first overall pick. I think that's the first time I've seen Josh Allen.
I've never seen him
mentioned as the first overall pick. First rounder?
Yeah.
First overall pick? No, first time. I don't know if Mel's just looking to get attention, if he's looking to drum up interest in next week's Senior Bowl. I like Josh Allen.
It's all marketing.
What do you mean? What's he marketing? His mock draft?
His mock draft.
Yeah.
you see Mel Kiper's mock draft?
Right.
This guy had Allen as the first. I mean, since we've been talking about quarterbacks, and we started this whole discussion last year when everybody started to talk about, man, that 2018 class of quarterbacks is going to be good. It's always been Rosen, Darnold, and then you'll have this kid, Allen from Wyoming. You have Baker Mayfield that actually won the Heisman, and then you have Lamar Jackson. That's the first time I'm actually seeing this kid who didn't even have a strong year like that be mentioned as the first to go off the board. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's his size.
It's 6'5".
Yeah.
Mel says his mock draft, he says, the NFL is all about projection. He has a high ceiling. Coaches want to work with Josh Allen because he has all of the tools.
Yeah, okay. I mean – you know, they projected Blake Bortles because he's 6'5", 6'6", and look where that's gotten him. I mean, they're in the AFC Championship, but they're trying to not have him actually be a big part of that game.
Mel Kiper has the Giants at number 2 going with the UCLA quarterback Josh Rosen, which, you know, I think makes some sense there, right?
Mm-hmm.
He has Sam Darnold at number 5 going to the Denver Broncos. He has the other quarterback you mentioned, the Oklahoma quarterback, going a
Baker
little bit
Mayfield.
Late. Yeah, 13th to the Washington Redskins. And as far as the Bills, Mel Kiper, you know the Bills are deeper down in the draft, the final third of the draft. At 21, he has the Bills drafting cornerback Mike Hughes from Central Florida. And at 22, he has the Bills drafting defensive tackle Maurice Hurst from Michigan. A couple of defenders for the Bills in Mel Kiper's first mock draft, mock draft 1.0.
Now, as we know from last year's draft, you totally don't know what's going to happen. And we talked about this in the office with Lorenzo. It's a crapshoot. He said he doesn't even watch it or pay attention to any of this stuff, because who would have known that the Bills would have traded back 17 spots to take Tredavious White? I mean, you don't know what's 17 spots. I mean, we were even saying, all right, if they trade back, you're not going to go back past 5 spots, maybe 8 spots. They went 17 spots back, you know, so you don't know. They might trade up 17 spots this year to try to get a quarterback. I mean, you truly don't know. The one thing that I will say is this. When you look at the free agent situation right now, E.J. Gaines might be the hottest that he can ever get, you know, and so when he gets out there on the market, looking at how he played this year, he had some injuries, but with the team sitting at, 8-3 when he was actually in the lineup in the regular season, you know, that's something that he and his agent are going to use, and you might get some teams that want to offer him some big money, and it's tough to turn that stuff down, you know. So
you might be looking at a situation where you need to bring in a corner. So it wouldn't shock me if they drafted a corner. It wouldn't shock me if they drafted a defensive tackle or even a linebacker, because they need linebacker depth as well, linebacker help as well. So we'll see where they go, but I wouldn't be shocked at anything that they do in this draft, especially going off of last year's draft.
Very early in the process, but Mel Kiper is out with his first mock draft. Going to take a break. We'll get back to more of your phone calls when we return. The John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
John Murphy and Donald Jones coming to you live from One Bills Drive. Coming up next hour, Merrill Reese, the longtime play-by-play voice of the Philadelphia Eagles, to talk about the NFC Championship game. Here's a call from Ian in Rochester. Hello, Ian. Welcome to the show. Hi, Ian. Hello, Ian.
Hey, John.
How are you?
Good. You guys were talking about the looking back at the Jaguars and Bills playoff game. And the thing that came to mind was just how much fun it was to make the playoffs after a 17-year drought. That is the span of my entire lifetime. And I was very excited to make the playoffs and kind of didn't know how to handle a playoff game. So I kind of went in with lower expectations, just, you know, it's going to be fun, first time experiencing new things. But that game was the most intense 13 total point game I've ever watched. And it made me so excited for the playoff games to come in the future, where we maybe don't kind of, you know, get in on help. We get in because we win our games and we control our destiny. And it just made me look to the future, and I'm very excited about our opportunities in the future to play more games like that. I think that's why everybody plays football, is to win a championship. So it was cool to experience that as a Bills fan, seeing the team in a playoff game, in a scenario where you win and you move on towards the Super Bowl, and if you lose, you're out.
Yeah, Ian, you're right. I think, you know, there haven't been enough of those high-stakes games around here.
No.
Obviously, 17 years with a playoff drought. Those are the high stakes involved in those games, and the what's at stake, I think, are what makes those games special. And I'm glad we all got a taste of that.
Yeah.
And a brief taste of that this year.
I remember last year, the playoffs were kind of boring. This year seems like one of the more exciting, in terms of overall playoff games. First of all, you talk about the Bills and how the Bills actually got into the playoffs. That started the playoffs right there.
Yeah.
How they got in. Everybody paid attention to this team around the country, to this team, and how they got in. But then you go to the next week and the way the Titans actually came back on the Chiefs and beat them. And then you look at last week and at a couple of those games, but especially the Saints-Vikings game. It's just been like exciting games in the playoffs. It's been fun to watch.
And I do think, as Ian, you pointed out, it bodes well for the future. And we did this poll last week, right? Twitter poll. What's the best thing about the Bills season? Was it breaking the playoff drought? To my mind, the best thing was the foundation has been laid for future success. Now, it might not be a steady climb next year. You know, they won 9 games this year. I don't know. They're going to win 10, 11, maybe not next year. But the foundation has been laid for that kind of excitement, that kind of postseason run. I think that's the best thing that happened in the 2017 Bills season.
That's definitely the best thing that happened in the season. The most exciting thing was how they got in the playoffs and how that thing happened. Obviously, it didn't end the way you wanted it to, but how they actually ended the playoff drought. If that was a question, I might have went with that. If it was what's the most exciting thing, it would have been, man, how they actually got in the playoffs. Not the fact that they broke the drought, but how they did it.
Thanks for your call, Ian. We're going to take a break. We're going to look at one of the teams in the championship games this weekend, the Philadelphia Eagles, with their longtime play-by-play voice, Merrill Reese, standing by to join us next on the show. Come on back for that. The John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts. We're live at One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Radio Network Sports Update.
The update from One Bills Drive. Bills personnel staff and some of the coaches getting set for next week's Senior Bowl. The Bills will be there scouting out the top senior college prospects in this year's NFL draft. Our coverage there starts next Tuesday. In the meantime, the Bills added a veteran safety to the roster yesterday. They did a reserve future free agent signing was safety Kelsey McCray, 29 years old, played with the Seattle Seahawks mostly on special teams in 2015 and 16. He did fill in for Cam Chancellor in his two seasons there. McCray came into the league as an undrafted rookie free agent signed by the Miami Dolphins in 2012. Kelsey McCray, safety, signed to the Buffalo Bills roster yesterday. Patriots quarterback Tom Brady sustained an injury to his right throwing hand in a minor collision in practice yesterday. The Patriots will update his practice status a little bit later on. A source says Brady's hand should be okay, but another source says it is possible the injury could affect him slightly in Sunday's AFC Championship game against the Jacksonville Jaguars. Ending weeks of speculation, the Jets have fired their offensive coordinator, John Morton, released after just one season yesterday. Head coach Todd Bowles praised Morton at the end of the year, but decided to make the move because of what he called philosophical differences. The NFL has selected Gene Steratore as the referee for Super Bowl 52. He came into the league in 2003 as a field judge and has been the referee since 2006. It will be the first Super Bowl for Gene Steratore. He'll get the assignment in Super Bowl 52. Dolphins wide receiver Jarvis Landry is not happy with the way his contract talks are going slowly. He says he still wants to stay with the team. His agent says the Dolphins made an offer in early December. He followed with a counteroffer shortly, but he continues to wait on the team. No contract yet for Jarvis Landry with the Miami Dolphins. Sabres come back from the bye week with a game tonight at the Garden against the New York Rangers. That's a 7:30 faceoff. In college basketball, the Purple Eagles of Niagara bring their four-game win streak to the road. They play Quinnipiac, the Bobcats, 7 o'clock tonight on the road. And that is the update from One Bills Drive. John Murphy, Donald Jones, as we begin hour number three. NFC Championship game on the marquee this Sunday, the Vikings and the Eagles. And joining us right now on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline, getting set to call by my count his 7th NFC title game. Happy to have the longtime legendary play-by-play voice of the Philadelphia Eagles, Merrill Reese, on the line with us. Merrill, John Murphy up here in Buffalo with Donald Jones. Thanks for joining us. Congratulations. Back to the title game for you.
Thank you. As you got the count right. That's 7 in 103 years.
103 years. You know, I was doing a little research today on this, though. We celebrated in Buffalo up here when the Bills broke their 17-season playoff drought. And I was looking back at Eagles history. They went a long time without a playoff appearance, right? And not that you were there for all of it, but the NFL Championship game in 1960 to 1978, that's 18 years without a playoff appearance, right, for the Eagles. When you got there and they made the playoffs the next year.
Yeah, that's right. That's absolutely right. But, of course, don't forget there really weren't playoffs in those years. I think at one point there was a runner-up bowl, something like that, but then it was the East against the West for the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
No Super Bowl for the championship game, of course.
Right. I guess it doesn't compare to the Bills' 17-year drought, does it? No, thanks, Merrill. I was feeling
not
good
too many things that compare to that.
I was so happy for the Bills, and I rooted very, very hard for my good friend Sean McDermott.
I know
he's terrific.
Yeah. You and I have had that conversation before. In fact, even back in the summer in the preseason game, you think very highly of the Bills' head coach Sean McDermott, don't you?
Oh, I do. I mean, he's a terrific guy. Very, very bright guy. He's the kind of person that you have to like personally and respect.
Yeah.
I think he's going to continue to take those Bills in a very, very promising direction.
Hey, Merrill, you know, people have talked about when he was in Carolina, he's even talked about, I've always been preparing to be a head coach. And Carolina, once he was hired here, there were a lot of national reporters that said, man, you could tell in Carolina that he was going to be a head coach at some point. Now, when he was in Philadelphia, did you feel that way about him?
Well, when he was in Philadelphia, don't forget, he had more of a backup role. I mean, the great defensive coordinator Jim Johnson was the man at that time. So Sean wasn't the guy you looked at up front in the auditorium speaking for the defensive side of the ball. But you could see how bright he was. You could understand what kind of a worker he was. And when he took over for Jim Johnson, I thought he did a good job, but the team was losing players and personnel went downhill, and he really didn't have much of a chance. But I knew that he would get another chance, and I was glad that he was able to go with Ron Rivera to Carolina, because Ron Rivera is a great guy, and he would allow Sean to implement his defense and do what he felt was right. And I thought that this was a guy who would very definitely have a chance and very definitely come through. And I believe that Buffalo is in good shape with Sean McDermott.
Merrill, I know you feel very strongly, too, about a Bills favorite up here, LeSean McCoy. You had him for the early years of his career, and you think a great deal of the Bills' talented running back, don't you?
Well, I will go so far as to say that, in my opinion, he is the greatest back in Eagles' modern history.
Wow.
Now, I mean, you go back to the 40s, you go back to the history books, and you find out about a guy by the name of Steve Van Buren.
Right.
But of all the great backs that I've seen, and I think there have been three of them over this span of 40 years, 41 years, one was Wilbur Montgomery, who was the guiding light of their Super Bowl team in 1980. The other was Brian Westbrook,
mm-hmm.
and this one is the third was Shady McCoy. He has all the records. He has done more than any other. He was more durable. Oh, he'd get dinged from time to time, but he'd fight through injuries. Nobody with the ball in his hands was more dangerous than Shady McCoy. Had a lot of fun calling his runs. He would leave people in his wake, and I still think he's one of the great backs in the National Football League. Now, listen, there were a lot of good backs here, very good backs like Ricky Waters, Deuce Staley, who's now the running back coach. There are others that I could name, but I'll tell you, Shady was the best of all.
Now, as you talk about Shady being one of the best in that franchise's history, I mean, we talk about him actually being one of the best in this franchise's history as well. You know, as well as we know, he went over 10,000 yards. Do you feel like at this point in his career, he's done enough to be in the Hall of Fame?
Absolutely. Oh, I think he is an absolute Hall of Famer. There's no question in my mind about that. You know, sometimes they have to wait a little bit on his first ballot. Look, there's an Eagle in the city who has been attached to the team from time to time, who's still around the building, who should be in the Hall of Fame but never gets in, and that's Harold Carmichael.
Yeah.
That's why when Terrell Owens doesn't get in, it doesn't bother me, really. When Harold Carmichael, who was the dominant receiver of his era, didn't get into the Hall of Fame and hasn't been in there yet, to me, I mean, he was the best Eagles receiver of all time, and he's still on the doorstep. So the other thing doesn't bother me.
We're on the line with Merrill Reese, the longtime play-by-play voice of the Philadelphia Eagles in his 41st season with that team. Hey, Merrill, did you see this coming? I want to take you back to Week 14, and Carson Wentz gets hurt. The next day, the news comes out that he's out for the year with his knee injury. At any point after that, did you think, yeah, I can see this going deep into the playoffs, or were you skeptical?
I wasn't as confident as I had been because Carson Wentz is unbelievable. He's another dimension. He's a guy who I saw sacked this year. Thought he was sacked. He was under a pile, and all of a sudden I blinked and he was 10 yards downfield.
Mm-hmm.
He could extend plays like nobody can. He's an amazing, amazing athlete. But I also think that Nick Foles is a good quarterback. I do think that Nick Foles can start for a lot of teams. And it took him a couple. Well, actually, he came in, pulled the thing out of the fire in the Rams game. Next week, played well. The defense didn't, but Nick threw four touchdown passes and no interceptions to win against the Giants. Then he dipped a little on a Monday night game against the Raiders. It was windy and cold, and he really didn't play up to par. And then they threw him in for a couple of series in that tune-up game, and then out against the Cowboys. Didn't do much to inspire confidence. But I knew Nick Foles could play, and I knew that Nick Foles wouldn't go out there scared. So I still thought their chances were there. Not as positive as when Carson Wentz was there, but I still felt that Nick Foles could do the job.
Now, Nick Foles was there, and he got out the door, and then he came back. They drafted Carson Wentz. How instrumental has a guy like Frank Reich and the rest of the offensive coaches there been and the development, and now bringing Nick Foles along, is now you have to actually go and win this thing for us.
You know, Frank Reich, there is a guy who should be a head coach. There is no doubt. I mean, you know him. Buffalo natives know all about Frank Reich and his miraculous turnaround in that game against Houston many years ago. But Frank Reich is just an exemplary person. He's strong. He's authoritative. He should be a head coach, and it's amazing to me that I hadn't heard his name come up, although I did recently in Tennessee, so we'll see. But Frank Reich should be a head coach. But when you surround a quarterback with Doug Peterson, who was in this league as a quarterback for 16 years, Frank Reich and John DeFilippo, who is also an outstanding quarterback coach, you are giving them the best training that you could ever give a young quarterback, and that so much means so much his development. And these three have done just a remarkable job. But, of course, you had to have the talent to work with. Not every quarterback coming into this league, no matter how highly he's drafted, can develop into a Carson Wentz. He's got it. He's a natural. He has God-given ability, and along with that, he has the enthusiasm, the drive, the diligence, everything, the dedication that you have to become one of the best. I thought going into the season that I was going out on a limb by saying within the next 3 years, Carson Wentz would become a top-five quarterback. I was too conservative because he's already a top-five quarterback.
We're with Merrill Reese, the longtime play-by-play voice of the Philadelphia Eagles. It also helps, I would think, that Nick Foles has a strong running game, right, with LeGarrette Blount, Jay Ajayi. That could be a quarterback's best friend, too, and they've got that going on down there.
Well, that's a pretty good offensive line. They've got very good offensive line play, despite the fact that they lost their best offensive lineman, Jason Peters. Here's the whole thing, guys. When I went into this season, I thought, you know what? This team, with Wentz developing, has a chance to compete for the NFC East. A chance. They're more likely to end up as a wild card team. But on the top side of things, they could win possibly 10 games. But if you told me that they would lose Jason Peters, they would lose Darren Sproles, who was a great weapon for this team, not only on punt returns, but out of the backfield, lose their best linebacker, Jordan Hicks, lose their best special teamer, Chris Maragos, lose their kicker, Caleb Sturgis. And if you said, what do you think? Here's who they're going to lose. I'd say they're going to be lucky to win six games. But they have been unbelievably resilient. And that, a lot of that depends, is reflective of the attitude that they've had and the way that Doug Peterson has given them no room for excuses. And each week he stands in front of this team and says, let's go 1-0. That's all. Let's go 1-0. And this team has responded.
Hey, Merrill, you guys have actually had a lot of recent Bills DBs come into that organization the last couple of years. But the latest one in Ronald Darby, and I remember the first couple of games, he had a rough start to his first couple of games out in Philadelphia. But he seems like he's come around. What's the feeling on Ronald Darby and his future with the Philadelphia Eagles?
Oh, I think it's very, very bright. I don't know who's going to have to sit down because the guy who has surprised everybody in his second year is Jalen Mills. He came in as a late-round draft choice from LSU, but he just continues to get better and better. Ronald Darby's an outstanding player. You can see his talent in a minute, and he makes a big play in every single game. And then, of course, next year they're going to have – actually, he's up with a 53-man roster now, Sidney Jones, although he didn't dress last week, but he's like getting an extra first-round draft choice for next year. He's a great talent. So you'll have three back there who can all be terrific starters. But Ronald Darby, he's a really nice young man, and he's a good player. Of course, you guys got a great guy, too, in Jordan Matthews. I still think his best days are ahead. He's talented. He's bright. He's a credit to the organization.
You got a great defense there, Merrill, and that was put on display last Saturday night. I want folks to listen to your play call of the goal line stand when the Philadelphia defense kept the Falcons out of the end zone. A quick cut from that play.
Ryan with Coleman to his left. Ryan rolls. Ryan pumps. Ryan is throwing it up in the air. Incomplete! Incomplete! And Taylor for Jones, incomplete. And the Eagles take over on downs with 58 seconds left.
What a great finish that was. And in some ways, Merrill, it seems like that play, that series of plays, got overshadowed the next day by the spectacular nature of the Minnesota Vikings win, huh?
That was unbelievable. I mean, that's one of those plays for the ages. Probably the worst defensive play I've also ever seen that went along with it and made it possible. But, that's in the old miracle stage where you have one last gasp and you cash in like that. Mm-hmm. But, look, I'll take the way the Eagles game ended, too. Actually, you know what? Here's the funny thing. They made that the do-or-die play, but it really wasn't, because if that pass had been complete and they had scored a touchdown on it, that's 16 to 15. So now Now they have to go for a two-point conversion. That's not an automatic to give them a three-point lead. There were still 58 or 59 seconds remaining on the clock. Eagles still had a timeout. So who's to say they couldn't have come downfield, maybe not done what the that was accomplished by the Vikings on that, but they didn't have to. All they had to do was come down to about the 35 and then bring out Jake Elliott, who has a propensity for making long, dramatic field goals.
That's the way to think it through. I like the way you're thinking there, Merrill. Hey, Merrill, 41 seasons you've done Eagles play-by-play. How does this team rank as far as excitement level and fun with some of the great teams you've been around with that Eagles franchise over those 41 years?
I'll tell you where they really rank at the top, in the locker room. This is one of the best group of people I've ever been around. I mean, these guys have fun. There's no room for selfishness. Nobody complains about how many carries he had. Nobody worries about how many targets he had in that game. Everybody is pushing everybody else. They're having fun. Nick Foles came in the first day after that win in Los Angeles when Carson Wentz went down, and he said to all of us, "I want you guys to know something. This is Carson Wentz's team. I will do everything I can to take this team as far as they could go. But this team, the credit for this team, is it's Carson Wentz's team." So that's the kind of guy Nick is, and that's the kind of feeling that goes throughout this 53-man roster. Doug Peterson's done one of the best jobs I've ever seen. I've known him a long time. I've known him for 16 years when he was Donovan McNabb's backup when Andy Reid first came here. But he's the same guy this week. This is interesting because usually you can feel something when you're in an NFC championship game, let alone any playoff game, where you can just kind of feel the tension build during the week, and maybe the players are a little edgy. You see the coach shorten his comments during his media conferences. Not with Doug. He's relaxed. He said to me yesterday, he said, "This is really fun. We get to have a longer football season. We're having more games." He's enjoying it. I describe Doug as the kind of guy I'd like in my golf foursome. He's a regular guy. He's a great guy. And the feeling in that locker room is just, we're having a great time. Let's keep it going. And I hope that's reflected on Sunday, and I hope this team gets to go to the Super Bowl. But I will tell you this. I've looked at the matchups. I've looked at the stats during the regular season. I've seen hours of game tape on the Minnesota Vikings, and when I look at it, I just wouldn't step forward and say I think the Eagles are going to win or I think the Vikings are going to win. I think you're going to see a very tight game, really impacted by two great defenses. That's where you're going to see. I think you're going to see a low-scoring game, and somebody's going to make a play or a mistake to influence the outcome at the end. That's how close I think it is.
Hey, Merrill, one of the things that you were talking about was the locker room, and this is a great group of people. Now, there are two players in that locker room that traditionally might not have fit into that type of locker room, and I'm talking about the two running backs and Jay Ajayi. As he came up from Miami, that was reportedly his issue, was being in the locker room, not working as hard. And then LeGarrette Blount with his history in different locker rooms and things like that. How have those two guys fit into that locker room and maybe changed their perception on the outside?
Okay, I'm going to give you my read on it. First of all, Jay Ajayi has been fine. He's quiet. He's not very outgoing, but he's nice to everybody. He's polite to everybody. And there's no problem at all with Jay Ajayi. Now, LeGarrette Blount, this is another case where you talked about, you used the word perceived. Mm-hmm. And I perceived LeGarrette Blount to be kind of Marshawn Lynch-like. Mm-hmm. I figured he wouldn't be outgoing. He looked just kind of tough. So in the Chargers game out in Carson, California, early in the season, he had a big game against the Chargers. And at one point, he broke across midfield, and he took off on a 60-plus yard run. And as he crossed the midfield stripe, I said, "He's free. He's on the loose. He's a runaway freight train." And down he went all the way inside the 5-yard line. Hadn't met him because you don't get that much of a chance to meet people during the preseason. Mm-hmm. You do once the season starts and the locker room doors open, but I had no face-to-face with LeGarrett. All of a sudden, that Tuesday, I was in the locker room, and all of a sudden, I saw LeGarrett Blunt, big, solid LeGarrett Blunt, walking towards me. And he stopped about 3 feet away, and I thought, uh-oh. And he said, Merrill Reese. And I stopped, and he said, I just loved when you called me a freight train. So the next day, I brought him a CD of the call, and I handed it to him. And I'm like 5'8 and 150 pounds. And he lifted me up in the air, and he said, my dad and mom are going to just love this tape, this call. And since then, he is a joy. Everybody loves him. He's outgoing. He's happy. He's one of my favorite people in that locker room. He is anything but this serious, frowning, tough guy. He's just a great guy. I love him. He's terrific.
Hey, Merle, I got to tell you, your enthusiasm, your approach, you remind me of a guy you know very well, my predecessor, the late, great Van Miller. And I came across the quote that you were quoted a couple of years ago saying this. Let me read it. You said, I'd rather broadcast an Eagles game than any single thing I do in the world. I just love it so much. That's kind of spoke to me, Merrill. I thought, yeah, he gets it. He knows how much fun this is.
It is. It's more fun every year. I have no plans to ever retire. They'll have to remove me with a crane. But I'm telling you, I love doing this. I'm a golfer. I'm a passionate golfer. In the off season, I might play 100 rounds a year, and that's my passion. And I'll tell you that I would rather do an Eagles preseason game than play around in Augusta. That's how much I love this job, if you call it a job, whatever it is that I do.
Well, we're really happy for you, Merrill. I know you'll keep doing it as long as you want and doing a great job. Thank you very much for spending a few minutes with us, and good luck. Fly Eagles this Sunday. Good luck to you, Merrill.
Thank you, John. You do a great job, too, and the people in Buffalo are very fortunate to have your broadcast.
Thanks, Merrill. Merrill Reese, the Eagles Hall of Famer. He is in his 41st season calling the play-by-play for the Philadelphia Eagles, his 7th NFC title game coming up this Sunday when the Eagles are home to play the Minnesota Vikings. He's an original, Donald. He's
man,
the real deal.
He's definitely
how about LeGarrette Blount picking him up in the
locker room? Yeah, yeah. I've been in the locker room with LeGarrette Blount, you know, and I know that he's a good guy. I know he's perceived like people perceive Marshawn Lynch, you know, but when you get into the locker room, these guys are just having fun.
Yeah.
They're great people in the locker room. So that's good. He comes up to him, picks him up, and starts, hey, my mom and dad are going to love this. That's great to hear.
Thanks to Merrill Reese for joining us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. Subway, eat fresh. Donald and I back with more in a moment, including NFL fake and real. Is that what we call it? No, real. True or false?
True or false.
True or false. Plus your phone calls, your thoughts on what does it take, what kind of a quarterback does it take to get this deep into the playoffs. Give us a call, 803-0550. Toll free 1-888-550-2550. The John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Thanks again to Merrill Reese for joining us on our show today. John Murphy and Donald Jones here on this Thursday afternoon here until 3 o'clock. We've got time to hear from you. I wonder if you have any thoughts on our Twitter poll topic today. We brought it up at the top of the show at 12 noon. Maybe you have some thoughts on this. How good a quarterback do you need to get deep into the playoffs, like conference championship level? Does this year's NFL playoff prove you do not need a quality quarterback to make a deep playoff run? What do you think about that? Give us a call, 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550. We've been taking votes on Twitter for the last 2.5 hours. Does this year's NFL playoff run prove you don't need a quality quarterback to make a deep run of the playoffs? Two-thirds of you, 67%, say no, it does not prove that. 33% of you say yes, it does prove that. I'm in the no camp here, Donald. I think we've got a weird year, a year with some injuries, a late injury to Carson Wentz, and we just talked about with Merrill Reese and a couple of others. And I do think you need a quality quarterback, not a great, not a Hall of Fame quarterback, but a good quality quarterback to make a run into the playoffs. This year, I think, is going to be maybe an exception to the rule. What do you think?
I like your comment earlier, as you said, you need a quality quarterback to get you to the playoffs.
Yeah.
You know, but then once you get into the playoffs, you got a couple of games that you got to win. and you can actually win the whole thing. And a defense can actually carry you through that thing. I think you need a quality quarterback to consistently have your team in the playoffs. You can't just rely on defense every year and say, we got a strong defense. We don't need that good of a quarterback. We can do this every year. You can't rely on it that way. There could be anomaly type of years where your defense is ridiculously good,
right,
and it gets you all the way through. Ultimately, you need a quality quarterback to have a consistent, good team every single year. But I think once you get to the playoffs, you can make a run in the playoffs with just having a very good defense.
I mean, look at the Jacksonville Jaguars, who got to the playoffs,
right,
won their first playoff game this year 10-3. So they won a game with 10 points, and then they had to put up 45 points
yeah.
7 days later to yeah. win a game. And it's basically do whatever you can. When you once you get there, whatever it takes. If you got to put up 45 or if you can get by with 10, you do whatever it takes, right, to advance.
That's it. It's one game. That's why you take it one game at a time, especially in the playoffs. In the season, we say that. But we all know it's a full season. But once you get into the playoffs, all right, this is the only game that matters, and we do whatever we got to do to win this game. Next week might be totally different, and we do whatever we got to do to win that game, and you just keep taking it one game at a time. You find yourself in the Super Bowl, then you find yourself one miraculous play away from winning the Super Bowl.
Yeah. Give us a call on that, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. A call here from Jack in Rochester. Hello, Jack. Welcome to the show. You're on the air with us.
Hi, got a quick question for Donald.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
You know, every time we get a new offensive coordinator, it seems like they always give the obligatory speech about, well, we're going to build it around the strengths and weaknesses of our offensive, you know, team.
Mm-hmm.
Some do it better than others. But who's responsible for actually defining those strengths and weaknesses? Is it the offensive coordinator because maybe he's coached a lot of positions like the guy coming in, or is it really the position coaches that define that?
That's a good question. I think it's a combination. I think it's important for the offensive coordinator to feel like he has the right guys on his staff, the guys that have the same type of philosophies, the guys that have the same type of philosophy on the type of player that they need to make a certain system work. And then it's important for those guys to continue to communicate and develop those players so that those guys are, you know, they fit into that system the right way. I think it's a total team effort, you know, but first it starts with the offensive coordinator having the right guys on his staff and those guys working together with the head coach, with the general manager and his staff to make sure that they have the right guys to make sure that this system can actually work.
It's a good question, though. Thanks very much for your call. 803-0550, the number, and outside Buffalo, toll-free at 1-888-550-2550. Let's play NFL True and False. It is sponsored by Yancey's Fancy, New York's Artisan Cheese. And the first topic on the table, true or false, deals with the topic we've talked about most of the afternoon. True or false, you need a quality quarterback to win consistently in the NFL. True, false? I'll say true. Our buddy Kevin Clark from The Ringer, used to be with Wall Street Journal, wrote a post about this on The Ringer. He said, you still need a quarterback. I'm inclined to agree with him on that. He says, this is Kevin Clark quoting him, this is the year when a bunch of teams caught lightning in a bottle at the same time. It took a bit of tragedy and bad luck and key injuries to superstars. We got a bit of a football education. What happens to the NFL when a quarterback-driven league loses many of its quarterbacks? You get the Eagles, the Vikings, and Jaguars all within a game of the Super Bowl. That's what happened this year. I think it's an anomaly. I think it's an outlier. I do think you still need a quality quarterback to win consistently in the NFL. I think that's true.
I think the crazy thing is, and I've been saying it, I think it's false. Or to consistently win, I go true on that one. With this question, to consistently win in the NFL, you got to go true. But the crazy thing is with the Eagles, they actually have a quality quarterback. And he was the reason they actually got to the playoffs. A lot of big plays. But their defense is a good defense, a very good defense. Not really talked about as much as I think people should talk about them because you had Carson Wentz, who was playing like the league's MVP. So because of that, everybody just overlooked the fact that, man, this defense is good. I do think, though, you need a quality quarterback to consistently, the big word is consistently, win in the NFL.
We got that as true. All right, part two, NFL true false. Another quarterback question. Blake Bortles of Jacksonville has the most to prove in the conference championship game. go ahead. Sounds like you want to go first on this one. You ready?
The most to prove.
I don't know. That's
all right.
Let me hear it.
I might go true on this one. The reason being, they picked up his fifth-year option, right? I think that they have had this situation all year where they don't want to put the game in his hands. We all know that the Patriots are a team that takes away what you do best, they take it away. Bill Belichick is going to take that away. Blake Bortles, you have an opportunity, if you've had two totally different playoff games and a crazy year, you have the opportunity to now make your coach and Tom Coughlin go back and say to themselves, should we keep him as our guy moving forward? Is he the franchise quarterback moving forward if he can have a great game against a coach that is going to try his best to take away what we do best? Can our quarterback actually go in here and take us to the Super Bowl? Because it's going to be on Blake Bortles' shoulders this week.
Yeah, he has to play well, and I don't think he's up to it. I do think he has the most to prove. You know, he completed just like 54% of his passes in the victory at Pittsburgh last week. A couple of late passes that he made, a couple of plays, a couple of blown coverages by the Steelers. You know Belichick and that group is going to say, okay, beat us, Blake Bortles. Go ahead, beat us.
You know.
I don't think he's capable. I don't think he's capable of doing that. Yeah. I think he does have the most to prove.
Yeah, I would, out of all of the teams that are playing, I think he has the most to prove. I think Case Keenum, people will put him up there in that argument, but I think he's done a lot this year for that team. Blake Bortles hasn't. They've been winning on defense in a running game. He has the most to prove.
And finally, NFL true or false. This deals with free agency. We are still about, six, 7 weeks away from the start of free agency, but quarterbacks always command attention. Kirk Cousins, Washington, is the top free agent of all rankings. That's what ESPN has him at. Kevin Seifert of NFL Nation ranks Kirk Cousins the number one free agent available on March 14th. 2 years under the franchise tag, in which he's earned about $44 million. They're going to be, if he's out there in the market, there'll be a bidding war unless Washington does it for a third time. This time it'd be $34 million. Cousins, I don't know. Cousins is a top free agent in 2018. I mean, I don't think Jimmy Garoppolo is going to hit the free agent market, but he is now. I say this is false. I think Garoppolo, if he hits the free agent market, which I do not anticipate will happen, I think he would command much more money and be the top target for most teams. Le'Veon Bell, I think, is a factor here as well. Drew Brees, not going to hit the market, but I think he would be higher. The guy that's interesting is Case Keenum. How would, you know, Kirk Cousins versus Case Keenum? Who would you rather have running your team?
I think I'd rather have Kirk Cousins running my team than Case Keenum. I think Case Keenum has had a good year, but we've also seen Case Keenum last year when he was with the Rams, just an ordinary guy. You know, so I think Kirk Cousins is a guy who teams will covet Kirk Cousins this year. So I would say he would be the top guy. I'm going to go true on this one. He'd be the top guy. I think the rest of those guys aren't going to hit the free agent market. I think they're going to get those deals done in the next couple of weeks. As you talk about Drew Brees, you talk about Garoppolo, there is no way San Francisco will let Garoppolo hit the free agent market. There's just no way. Yeah, you can't allow that. So I'm sure they are working hard right now trying to get that thing done.
Cousins intrigue you as a potential Bills signee if he does hit the free agent market?
No.
Me neither.
He does. And the reason, and I know people are going to say, what are you talking about, Cousins? No, I'm saying I don't think the Bills will want to pay him $25, $26 million a year. I just don't see them trying to get into that ballpark. I could be totally wrong. But I think Coach McDermott and Brandon Bean, they strike me as guys who want to build an organization through the draft. And I don't think they want to get into bringing a guy in as a free agent and pay him that type of money, because there's a reason why the Redskins have not paid him that type of money consistently every year. They franchised him, but there's a reason why he's going to be a free agent. I don't know what that reason is, but I just don't think they want to get into that range with Kirk Cousins. I think they'd rather draft a guy.
I do, too. I think this group here would rather start fresh with somebody new. Kirk Cousins has had some success, but not a great deal of success. And you're right. You know, they haven't fully committed to him out there in Washington.
Yeah.
They have yet to do that. I don't know that if I were the Bills, I mean, they make their own mind up based on what they see from Kirk Cousins, but I don't know that he's the answer here. I don't even know if I want a veteran free agent quarterback here for next year. You know what I'm saying?
It's always, when you have these guys who hit the free agent market, for me, there's a reason why they are hitting free agent market, especially a quarterback. Or when you have a guy who continues to get franchised, there's a reason why you have not committed to this guy long term. When this is a league that is a quarterback-driven league, everybody's starving for a franchise quarterback, you have a guy who people perceive to be a possible franchise quarterback, but you haven't locked him up full term. You haven't locked him up long term yet. What's the issue out there? You know, so I don't think Coach McDermott wants to get into that. And to be honest with you, Kirk Cousins has never been in any trouble off the field or any of that stuff.
Right.
But he's been a guy who's been a little mouthy. You know, he'll say certain things in a press conference. We've seen the videos of him coming off.
You like that?
And I don't think Coach McDermott wants to deal with stuff like that either. Yeah. I think he wants a more humble type of quarterback, a guy who I understand this is my team, and I'll show – when I'm on the field, I might show some passion. But speaking in the media and all of that stuff, I don't want that type of quarterback. I don't think Coach McDermott wants it.
Hey, speaking of quarterbacks, and we all know the AFC matchup, Jacksonville and New England, and Tom Brady got hurt in practice yesterday. The report was he collided with a teammate on his throwing hand, and Brady did not meet with the media yesterday, as he usually does on a Wednesday. Now comes this from New England just a couple of minutes ago. Patriots Tom Brady will be available to the media tomorrow. Not today.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's going to be a headline.
The headline is he's not even going to talk today.
Yeah.
What does this mean? Does it mean they're just avoiding the questions about his hand and giving it another day? Does it mean that there's really a problem with his hand? He was limited to practice yesterday. We have not seen a practice participation report from the Patriots yet today. I'm sure he's going to be listed as limited today because that's how they do it there. You know, they will try to cover as much as they can. But are we really dealing – we don't know. But do you think we're dealing with an issue that could affect the way Brady plays on Sunday, Donald?
I mean, when you hit your hand on somebody's helmet, it hurts. Especially, I'm sure they are practicing outside because they're going to be playing at home and it's going to be cold. So it probably hurt. I don't know how bad it is. But I swear, every week they have something that they're dealing with out there in New England. It's like they make this stuff up. And, guys, we just need you to be able to handle this stuff. It's like every time something comes up, they go out and have this crazy game. So everybody's worrying about Tom Brady's hand now. He's going to go out and throw for 400 yards against one of the best defenses in the league, you know. So I don't really know what the deal is out there, but I will tell you this. I've hit my hand on guys' helmets, and it hurts a lot.
That's okay. Maybe Brady's in some pain, but he's not going to meet the media today. He won't answer questions about his status today anyway. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back and wrap things up. We still have time to hear from you if you have thoughts on what kind of a quarterback it takes to go deep into the NFL postseason. Maybe you don't need a great one. You think that? Give us a call either way. 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. The John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts. We're live at One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
The John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
And now, what have we learned from today's show?
What have we learned is presented by Advanced Alarm, providing Western New York's homes and businesses with the finest in security and home theater, the preferred alarm and home theater provider of the Buffalo Bills. We had a good show here today. Do I sound defensive? I think we had a good show. I think Lorenzo Alexander was good. He did the first hour with us. Lorenzo with an hour-long lowdown today. And the Bills defensive end, Lorenzo Alexander, is he linebacker or defensive end? What day is it? Lorenzo Alexander talked about how he addressed our Twitter question. Do you need a top-tier quarterback to make a deep playoff run? Here's what Lorenzo Alexander said.
I think it's an outlier year. I mean, Nick Foles has at one point has been a pretty solid quarterback and was highly sought after.
Yeah.
Obviously, he hasn't had the consistency, but he does have the ability to lead team and put up points, throw touchdowns, minimal interceptions. Now, it's all about consistency. The other two guys, obviously – aren't those guys at all. I mean, Tom Brady obviously stands out being a Hall of Fame caliber. But, in a lot of years, there's always something that sticks out that is outside of the consistent things that you see year to year. And I think this is another year. But it also showcases that in December, January, if you have a great defense and a good running game, that you can find yourself winning games.
Lorenzo Alexander, we're going to talk more about that in a second. Thurman Thomas joined us today in the second hour of the show, the Bills Hall of Fame running back, talking about the Bills hiring Brian Daboll as their new offensive coordinator. Here's what Thurman said.
I think now that you have an offensive coordinator, I mean, you got Nate Peterman. Don't know if you're going to bring back Tyrod or not, but obviously everybody around Western New York thinks that you're going to draft a quarterback, and so this will be starting from scratch with the quarterback, and a new offense, and all three guys will be learning a new offense. So good start for him, and glad he's back home.
Brian Daboll coming back to coordinate the Buffalo Bills offense. Back to, Donald, what Lorenzo Alexander said, and kind of what you were saying, too. I think we're in agreement on this. You need a top-tier quarterback to have sustained success.
Mm-hmm.
But this late in the season, I think this is what Lorenzo was saying, this late in the year, you kind of ride it, get hot. If you got a quarterback not playing well, find another way to win.
That's exactly. You find a way to win every single week. Because what? Let's just say your quarterback has a bad game. Like Tom Brady had a bad game last year in the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
But that team, they all rallied together and they ended up making the big plays down the stretch to end up coming back. If you didn't have the big Edelman catch and all of that stuff happen in that game, you would have lost that game with the top tier, one of the best, if not the best quarterback ever. So I think sustained success, you need a top tier quarterback. Once you get here, it's all about who's healthy and who's the hottest.
We had a lot of response on Twitter to our Twitter poll question. Does this year's NFL playoff prove you do not need a quality quarterback to make a deep playoff run? We had more than 1,300 votes cast, and two-thirds of you said, no, it doesn't prove that. Kind of agreeing to what Donald and I said. 67% say, no, this year's NFL playoffs do not prove that. 33% say, yes, it does. You wonder how much of that is wishful thinking on the part of Bills fans who wonder if they're going to get a top-tier quarterback or if they have one and can they make a deep playoff run without one. People might be saying, yeah, you don't need a great quarterback. You can still go far in the playoffs. I don't know.
No, I think you need to get a quarterback here.
Yeah.
You want to win, you need to get a quarterback here. But you could have had a year like this where if you find a way to pull out that 10-3 loss, you find a way to win that game, then you find yourself in last week, then you could have found a way to win that game. Like
yeah.
But when you're talking about you want a team that's winning consistently, you need a quarterback here.
All right, we're going to be back tomorrow, obviously. Albert Breer from MMQB will join us tomorrow to talk about these playoff games, and we'll get Greg Cosell's take on the weekend coming up, the championship games from NFL, ESPN, NFL matchup. So join us tomorrow. Thanks to our presenting sponsor, Napa Auto Parts. Find your local Napa store online at NapaOnline.com. Production assistants, J.J. Torito, George Blass, Jeff Koltnick, Thomas Honnelder, Kelly Ruitt, our producer, Jay Harris. See you tomorrow at noon with the John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.